United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Well, so- Martin Hannity. This is News Talk 600. Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at tracyandfriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 8 minutes after the hour of 12 noon on a Friday here at the close and the end of the month. It's the 26th of July, and I hope you're having a good day today. The number is 347-945-5229, and guess what? It's open mic, and we want to hear from you today. Again, that number is 347-945-5229, and got a lot to talk about today. Want to bring up some conversation that we had on yesterday, and hopefully we'll talk about some new things today. There's a lot that goes out. I'm playing the Ohio Players today. They did a song called Ohio so long ago. I want to say back in the early 70s. And they're from down in southern Ohio, and I just want to appreciate them for a minute because I just happen to be in an Ohio mood since I am in northeast Ohio. The guy in Cleveland, I want to talk about this for a minute, and everybody, you know, they abandoned me early on, so you guys have to just, like, bear with me as I go through this dialogue. But, you know, can anybody explain to me why we give people, we let people cut, please, so we can house, feed, clothe, medical, and take care of them instead of taking them out? Because the guy, let me get the name of him because I'm going to mess up his name. Ariel Castro agrees to a plea deal in Cleveland on the kidnappings of those people. He had something like 700 and some odd counts. He kept them since they were little kids. I mean, he's 53 years old. You know, for the last 10, 15 years, he had those young ladies locked up in a house where he had kidnapped them, raped them, demonized them. They can't get anything out of them, yet we give him a plea deal so that we can house, feed, clothe, medical, take care of him for the rest of his life. I'm so confused why we do that. And if anybody can call, and I know because the appellate process is so long and, you know, so costly, so they tell me, but can anybody please tell me why we don't change the laws? Because if I catch you with the smoking gun, I know you are the smoking gun, and I got to open and shut case. Why in the world would I ever allow you all to do that? I'm just so confused. I just don't understand. The number is 347-945-5229. That's one of my early rants. I just don't. I mean, he's gonna say, "Yeah, I did it. Sorry," and we're done. Um, studies have been coming out lately, and they're saying that race relations in America, if no one knew, I could have told them that. They could have called me on the phone, and I could have told them this so they would know. Race relations in the country right now are worse than they were years ago. So I thought I'd get that out. The Zimmerman trial, which we need to talk about a little bit more, not because I want to, but because it's necessary. The Zimmerman trial, people are, you know, standing up. The NAACP is now standing with other states and calling for, you know, boycotts and calling for this. But tell me, are we going to do anything about the ones that are happening every day? I need to do. I feel like I sound like a broken record. But why don't we just do this every day? It would be good. I mean, we have people who are killing people every day in the streets. So why don't we do what's necessary? You know, why don't we go after laws and go after education and rally behind what causes people to be in the situation that they're in and economic development? And why don't we do all that so that we really don't have to be concerned about Trayvon Martin being on the other side of the bullet? Because as soon as we start doing some things that's going to change our community at large, people who are impoverished, then we won't have to worry about stand your ground, and we won't have to worry about, you know, drug abuse. You know, when we start getting parents to stop, and this is not poor parents, because I want to say this. There are some people that are in the middle-level income, and their kids are just as bad as lower-income parents or lower-income children, because they're breeding their children to become little thugs. They're breeding the little girls to become prostitutes and have, you know, illicit sex and all that kind of stuff and not saying anything to them. So they're breeding this. So if we don't get back to some common sense and some normality, we will always be where we are. So why don't we stand up and say, foul, we're not going to take it anymore. But to go, if you're going to do something, I mean, that just makes sense to me. And I know that sense is not common anymore, but common sense is still common sense, and we need to have some common sense so that we can get some things done if we're going to advance it, if we're going to get this right, and if we're going to do better. Because what we're doing right now is we are just playing real, real stupid. That's all. We're just stupid. We're not doing it, and it's not getting any better, and we don't care, and that's a problem, and we need to stand up, and we need to do something about it, because right now what's going on is just dumb. So I go back to my Cleveland statement. Here we are. We have a legislature, and this legislature is going to allow us to pay for people to live and to house them, to take care of them, and to spend money on them for the rest of their natural life, and not go to trial and get vindication because we're not going to kill him because of the appellate process. That's just my personal view, and I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. The number is 347-945-5229, and I just continue on with this. Want to thank the young man that called in yesterday who talked about, you know, his experience. I thought it was a very, very meaningful conversation about the reverse of this and the knowledge of this. And I want to thank Bonnie for calling in and talking about how she was raised. I was talking to somebody yesterday, and she is in her 80s, and she had really never heard that. And those are the conversations that we don't hear publicly that we need to start hearing, because people need to know where people are coming from. And we tend to align people and give them our own perception, and our own perception becomes our own personal reality. And in actuality, it's not reality. It's just there. Let me see what else. There was something else that I want. I'm still having a problem with this Cleveland thing. Eric Holder, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier yesterday, I got issues with the Attorney General deciding that he didn't like the Supreme Court, so we're going to take this another path, and we're going to go down a different rabbit hole. I got issues with this, and I need you guys to help me out. I just don't understand. I'm telling you guys, you're giving people too much leeway. You're giving them too much leeway. Let me throw this out there, too. There is a poll that has been taken, and it says that the majority of whites see America as colorblind, and nearly 80% of African Americans do not, which is true. True. But the question that I have is, why is it that it is so different where 80% sees it as colorblind and the other 80% sees it as much, much polarized and very, very colorblind? Please, I want you to chime in on that also, because I think that has some impact on our view. And going back to my perception and my reality statement, we have this preconceived notion that everything is, from my point of view, and somehow I'm indoctrinated this way to believe that everything is race-based. And now that I'm growing up and I'm getting a better view, I'm finding out that everything is not race-based. I need to define everything by what it is. 843, is that Not So Blind Mike, or is that South Carolina?
It's what's left of Not So Blind Mike after a hard week.
What hard week?
Listen to all this controversy and stuff. And
what controversy? You haven't even got it started yet.
Well, I know, but I'm still feeling the wounds from yesterday's conversations and stuff. I'm also having a humorous side of things. I got a phone call just a few minutes ago from a very dear friend, and she's just so sick of hearing about George Zimmerman in the news, and that the press is never going to leave this man alone. And she said he ought to probably change his name. If he wants the press to ignore him, he should just change his name and disappear. And I said, oh, that makes sense. She says, yeah, he should change his name to Ben. And I said, Ben Zimmerman? She goes, no, Benghazi. Then the press will ignore him.
We don't talk about Benghazi. Someone just posted something on my Facebook, and the question was, why has the president been so silent on Iran tortures?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, why? This has been a way to shift focus.
Yeah, it has.
And if you don't pay attention to, but then it is a conversation that if we don't get out in the open,
right,
and they will always be able to use it to shift our focus, because every time something comes up, they'll find a case or they'll go find something to shift the focus of America.
Right. And you said something a couple weeks ago during one of your conversations to a bunch of us around the line, and it was a pretty heated debate, but you said something that white America does not truly understand, and I'm paraphrasing you, so correct me, please, if I'm misspeaking what your position was, that white America does not understand the black experience just because they have some parallel experiences. They're not quite the same. And yesterday something happened with a gentleman that you had on the line who was African-American, and he was talking about somebody who had degrees and stuff being looked over and this and that. And then that's when the gal, Bonnie, spoke up and said, hey, this happened to her. And you know what? That is a common ground for all of us, because I can put you on the phone with 10 college professors who have all kinds of degrees, and because they are politically not aligned with the power structures of college, they're constantly being overlooked for promotions and stuff, even though they are the more qualified, credentialed person for the job. They don't get it because, again, this happens to everybody. The glass ceiling is there on many levels for all of us. So that is common ground. And as far as being arrested by police and stuff, I grew up in a project. I've been thrown into a police car a couple of times. One time they threw their guns on me and wanted me to drive a vehicle because it was registered to me, and they would not listen that I could not drive. And they beat my three friends with clubs to the ground who were trying to explain to them, don't let him drive. So I've been there.
You just drove.
Yeah.
And let me say it this way, and this is what I think you and others need to hear.
Yeah.
African Americans will never understand, I don't care if you're blind, if you're crippled, or if you're crazy.
Right.
It's like a man telling a woman he understands labor pains.
I understand that. I understand.
And when I say no, I need, because see, people say, well, this has happened to me.
Yeah.
And you have situations and circumstances that have happened to you. Yes, we say that.
Yeah.
But when a woman says you don't understand what childbirth is like,
right.
If a woman has really never been, or if a person has never been through childbirth and they've never been through a menstrual cycle,
right?
They've never had PMS.
Right.
It's really infuriating to a woman to hear from a man, I understand the pain that you're going through.
Right.
And
right.
People try to equate their personal circumstances into a into a culture that has been bred, because see, they haven't gone after all blind people. They haven't gone after all handicapped people. They haven't, but see, and what comes into the black community, and I'm going to call it black.
Okay, yeah, please.
In the black community, what has happened there, it has never, it's all been just because you viewed me because of the color of my skin.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't, and what you don't understand is the prejudices and the racism within our own community.
That I don't.
See, people don't understand the paper bag.
Right. But
where there were churches, there were churches, and you couldn't join the church if you were darker than the paper bag on the door.
I understand. And I've heard, I mean, when Boardman I say yes, I'm aware of that. I've heard of that.
But most people are not. And they try to sympathize where they should be empathetic.
Well, that's where I'm coming from. I'm very empathetic because though I did not live it 24/7, I'm trying to meet the people who are trying to explain to me their feelings by getting back into the moment. How did I feel to be wrongfully accused or singled out because I was a member of a group, you know, not an individual? But here's the other side, and I was thinking about it, and somebody yesterday gave the analogy of the black child just driving down the road on his bicycle being stopped and frisked by police. That sucks. But
yeah, but I felt it. And so when I say I felt it, so when I go down the street and I see the three, I see the young black men face down in the ground because of a traffic stop, I'm just driving by.
Yeah.
And I feel for them and can't do anything about it.
I understand. It's a great thing of disempowerment. However, and this is all I would say to people out there, on many levels through our lives, and some more than most for sure, we get these shocks to our dignity. We get these shocks to, you know, when we think we're just living our life and doing our own thing and enjoying our freedoms, all of a sudden there's this cold slap of reality that it's not what we thought. But that is a moment. And a moment, please don't give up and let a moment define the rest of your life. That child being stopped on that bicycle and frisked, if that child had good grades in school and had the support he needed at home to get an education, that child could still go to Harvard. That stop
but you,
on the bicycle
but
didn't
you can't,
stop his
you,
mobility.
But that does, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's not, that's not. That's that. If it was one time and you walked away,
yeah,
it would be great.
The issue
comes in is, it is, you know, the guy over in Warren. And I don't know if there was Warren is a suburb of Youngstown of where we live.
Uh-huh.
And a couple years ago, there were some break-ins in this community.
Uh-huh.
And the officer chased down some 10, I think they were 10, 11, and 12-year-olds. And they were running home from school. They were playing on their way home from school.
Uh-huh.
And an officer got out of his car, chased them down, and put them face down in a yard.
Uh-huh.
And they used to do that, and they hopefully it stops. But they used to do that not because they thought they did something, but to let them know if you act in this community, this is what we will do to you.
Yeah.
And they used it as a form of control.
Yeah.
And when it's not, it would be the first time you saw me and you did this to me and it was okay.
Yeah.
But see, it's an ongoing, I mean, consistent battery
right.
that happens within the community. So where white little kids look at police officers as peace officers, black little children are raised to look at police officers as thugs in suits because of the misperception that they have of what a peace officer is and the misperception that peace officers have because of the work that they're in towards young black males, more young black males than young black females.
And see, I
and
was
so
in
this
the middle
starts
of that.
At a very, very early age.
Yeah.
And because it starts at a very, very early age, they're trying to condition you early on to gain power over you, which is a point of racism and not prejudice.
Yeah. And see, my reality is halfway between those two extreme positions. I didn't see police officers necessarily as friends in the project. We saw them as people who were here for some reason to interfere with whatever we thought we were going to do to have fun and just get on with our lives. And so we resented their presence, and we have been rousted. The project I lived in had two limited access roads that led into it, and they were long enough where the police could wait on those roads. And I can tell you stories where I was almost home on a rainy night, walking in drenching, pouring rain, only to be told to get into the back of a police car, driven around for 2 hours, and let out of the car 9 miles away from my home, not even knowing where I was, being blind. Fortunately, I was with a sighted friend, and he kind of thought he knew where. And you know, 13, 14, 12 years old, you know, walking back from something legitimate, like going to hear some band at the roller skating rink or something, you know. And so, and again, it's not a 24/7 thing. I don't presume to fully understand the black experience in the United States as a 24/7 under the thumb grind, like it's been for some folks.
And it may not happen today.
I'm halfway between where most white America is and where you're coming from. I would say myself, I'm halfway there.
But most, I'd say if it happened to at least half of the white people in America, then it would be okay.
They wouldn't know what to do with it.
But if it happened to half of the blind people, it would be okay.
Yeah.
But it is not happening to every African American.
Most blind people don't push the envelope, and most black people don't. It's the ones who go out of the community.
My problem is just walking down the street.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, tending your business, walking down the street, and I'm not saying that all 100%, but I have friends who are millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Who have worked very, very hard, and they get the same harassment as a non-educated, non-working person in the street, and in their own neighborhood that they've worked very, very hard to live in.
And I had shared that story with you privately one time about a friend of mine in Baltimore who has accomplished and done a lot, and what happened to him, and how he called tears one day at 60 years old.
But we need to understand, we need to understand, and this is the issue. We don't want you to even be a part. We just want you to listen. So when you see us as an emotional people, you'll wonder why we get so emotional when some things come up. And Democrats have used this emotion to advance their agenda.
Sure.
See, they sit down and listen, where conservatives sit down and just look and try to answer the questions and try to empathize and sympathize with the situation in reference to you could not sympathize to this.
Uh-huh.
There's no way. And you may not understand it, because we don't want you to coalesce with us. We just want you to hear us. So when you see us get upset, you need to know why we're upset about what we're upset about. 267, I think that's Philadelphia. Your mic is on.
Yeah, I'm speaking as a person who's lived in the black community. I've had experiences with the police. And the problem is that when the police are in a poor white type community, the whites feel that they are a part of the country, they're a part of the system. When you're dealing with black people who are poor, they feel they're disconnected from the system. They're not a part of the system. So therefore, they have more of a combative view of the police. And to stop the whole thing where people are telling people not to tell on people who are engaged in crime and to not to try to snitch on people, this comes from the fact that the black neighborhoods identify with people who are criminals and drug dealers, because they're seen as being Robin Hood type figures in the community.
And
the poor blacks, they have a tendency to try to identify with this. Mm-hmm. And so this just encourages an outcast type mentality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing you. I understand it fully, because I've seen it up close in some of the neighborhoods when Tracy and Philadelphia, when I first got out there working as a blind carpenter, the only people that would hire me were the people who were who had that similar attitude about authority. Let's just put it that way. And one of the clients I had was a gentleman they called the mayor. and the north end of town was the black end of town, and everybody knew if there's anything you wanted to go do that you didn't want the police to know about, you went to the north end of town to do it, whether you were white or black. And this gentleman
right.
ran all that, and I did work for him at his home and stuff, and because of that I was privileged to, again, I won't say I understand 100%, but I'm kind of halfway between the people who don't understand anything and where you're coming from right now, because, again, I got to witness it up close in a non-threatening situation. I was amongst friends, black and white, at the time when I experienced these things.
Right.
And to tell you the truth, I kind of admired the outlaw bad boy mentality.
Right.
Because it was a Robin Hood thing, and I could identify with that. It was It was the justice I couldn't get.
It's
right.
killing it. It's
and
killing
what
it.
Happens when the black men are incarcerated, the Muslims have a lot of influence in the jails and in the prisons. And the reason why, because they tell the black men when they get locked up, if you're a Christian, you're following the belief system of the white man.
Uh-huh.
So the Muslims are able to pray into they're able to pray into that type of thinking. So when the black men are released from prison,
mm-hmm.
they automatically start to join up and they start to become a part of Islam. So
Philadelphia. I need for you to, because see, you just used some terms, and I don't think my whole audience understands what you're saying. Because they're not joining, and they're not joining the Muslim movement. They're not joining the Mecca Islam, because there is
no.
a difference. They're joining the Nation of Islam, and you need to specify that.
Actually, what has happened is the Orthodox Muslims have started to gain more of an influence inside the prison than the Nation of Islam. So what happens is when the men are released from prison, they go into Orthodox Islam automatically. And so you start to see more and more of the Muslim families that are in the black neighborhoods now, because a lot of these men have been to prison. And as a result, they have been converted to that religion in prison.
I think you need to come up with some statistics on that, because I see I'm inside of inner cities and inside of populations. And I've got to take a break. I see where some come out, but there's not a significant number that come out a part of the Orthodox.
Well, it depends on where you're located.
Philadelphia. Listen to what I said. My first statement was I need to see some statistics on that. Those statistics will make it more viable for people to listen to. Because I have seen people come out as a part of the Nation of Islam. But I don't, and it may be that way in Philadelphia, but in other parts of the country, they're still not coming out in record numbers being becoming Orthodox Islam. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229, and we'll see you on the other side of our break.
Will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingly Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingly offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingly, it's not clean. Kingly Hand Wash and Wax, 309 West Midlothian Boulevard.
It can begin with an email, a phone call, a flyer in the mail, or perhaps a misleading website. Loan modification scams. They come in all shapes and sizes and under different names. Loan rescue firms, counseling services, mortgage consultants. Sometimes posing as a legitimate mortgage company willing to help you modify your loan and get caught up with your payments. But beware, these are highly trained con artists looking to steal your home. They often know who you are, where you live, and because it's public record, know if you are on the brink of foreclosure. You're not alone, however. The National Crime Prevention Council and U.S. Department of Justice have partnered to help homeowners identify and steer clear of these scam artists.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. Protect your home and safeguard your finances. It only takes a little time to become informed. Start by finding a free legitimate housing counselor today.
Take the first first step, visit www.ncpc.org/mortgage fraud. That's ncpc.org/mortgage fraud. This message is from the National Crime Prevention Council and U.S. Department of Justice.
This is the Sean Hannity Show.
You know, when liberals use the Bible and Christianity to advance their progressive ends, well, the mainstream media agrees with them. For them, it's just, oh, yeah, I agree with that. When a conservative uses the Bible and Christianity to advance a conservative point, they hyperventilate the media. They're warning of a coming theocracy in America.
This is the Valley's home for Sean Hannity. This is News Talk 600.
I'm Harper Keegan with your headline news. A longtime Struthers mayor has passed away, and his funeral is tonight. Harold Milligan died Wednesday morning at St. Elizabeth's Hospital. He was 102 years old. Milligan served six consecutive terms as mayor from 1952 to 1964. A Mahoning County grand jury has indicted a Youngstown man who police say shot four people at a Campbell house, shot himself, and then tried to burn the house down. 24-year-old Devin Spain faces four counts of felonious assault and eight counts of aggravated arson. No one died in the shooting. Police say Spain was hinting that he wanted to kill everyone in the house. And a big victory for property owners in Trumbull County who didn't want to pay for sewer extensions in their neighborhood. A Trumbull County Common Pleas magistrate ruled against county officials in a civil suit filed by homeowners in 2004. The ruling says the property owners don't have to pay the cost of sewer projects because they were not properly notified of it. For WSOM News, I'm Harper Keegan.
Are you looking to save money on your heating and cooling bills this year? Quality Windows can meet all your window needs while improving your curb appeal and increasing your home's value. Family owned and operated since 1998, Quality Windows lifetime warranted easy maintenance windows can save you up to 35% on your energy bill. They'll bring the showroom to you.
Hi, this is Kevin Goldberg, owner of Quality Windows. Call us today for your free in-home estimate at 1-800-863-9344. And you won't have to worry. There's no high-pressure, three-hour sales pitch with us. We don't require down payments, and we also have many different financing options available. And our prices start at just $179. And if you call in and mention this ad, receive an additional 20% off our Timeless series. And all the Quality Windows come with a true lifetime warranty.
Get your free estimate and more info at QualityWindowsLLC.com. 800-863-9344. Quality Windows. You've seen the rest. Now come see the best.
The excitement of the new Chevrolet is back. 600WSOM.com wants to put you in the virtual driver's seat of today's most advanced vehicles and to give you a chance to win the Auto Lot Jackpot. Just go to our website and enter the virtual auto showcase. There's a door to click for each of the Chevy All-Star dealerships. Check out each dealership right online. Sales hours, service hours, even a map to their front door. And once you're in, you could be just one click away from winning the Auto Lot Jackpot. Your choice of $100,000 worth of vehicles. Let's see. How about five $20,000 cars? Or maybe three $33,000 SUVs? Or how about a pair of $50,000 luxury sedans? Wow. Mix and match up to $100,000.
Thank you so much.
We told you the excitement of the new Chevrolet is back at 600WSOM.com.
This is News Talk 600.
Broadcasting from the Ford Studios. In a world where everything seems the same, Ford Fusion stands out. Get to your Northeast Ohio Ford dealer today and find attractive lease offers on several new vehicles.
1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM.
Come on and dance with me. It's a feeling I can't fall.
Hey, we're back. And you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSON AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And it is the, it's 41 minutes after the hour of 12 noon here on WSON AM 600. Hope you're having a good day today. Listen, if you're looking for a place to take your pet, you need to check out a place to take your pet for getting groomed. You want to check them out at Pet Spa Luxury Cat and Dog Salon. It's located on Western Reserve Road here in the Youngstown area. And they will take care of your dog and your cat. They give them, I found out the other day, they do scents. And you can give them a call at 330-758-4444. Their address is 1122 Western Reserve Road. It's in Boortman. And it's right about a quarter of a mile, if not that far, from the Glenwood and Western Reserve exit. Or if you're going up Glenwood, you make that right onto Western Reserve, and it's about a quarter, I'm going to say it's about two-quarters of a mile from Market Street. They do a great job. They're in and out. They take care of your pet. Your pet doesn't mind. They do nail trims. They do grooming. They cut hair. They do flea dips, and they take care of your pet. So give them a call if you're looking for a place to take your dog for grooming. Open mic, and I want to hear from you today. The number is 347-945-5229. I think Not So Blind Mike is on with me, and Philadelphia is there, and want to hear from you. I got to throw this in there, because I don't know if you guys know this, but Mark Zuckerberg, I'm really impressed with this kid who has Facebook. His wealth soars to $3.8 billion on yesterday. He is the world's most famous social networking service. It rallied 30% to the highest level since 2012. And, you know, he had a rough start coming out the chute when it came to his IPO. And they've been plugging away, and they've really been trying to work on the profitability of Facebook, because the question was for everyone, how do they make their money? And I have to say, I'm really impressed.
Well, also, but he had a lot of help as well. And I think the person who's actually leading the company, I think her name is Sandberg, she came on board, and she's the CEO of the company. And so she's able to direct how the business is operated. But he basically got a lot of help from the government. Members of the NSA and the CIA went on to his board and basically almost kind of directed him as to how to manage his website. But the original idea of the website did not come from him. The website was actually a website that was used by the college that he was able to attend, and he copied that college website, and he basically took the idea on a national scale.
Can I say this to you? So I really want to, and so you and other people out there that are listening, do you realize that there is a place called Kewpie Burgers down in Cincinnati, Ohio? I think it's in Cincinnati, or it's on. Mm-hmm. It's not Cincinnati, and it is the same as Wendy's.
Yeah.
See,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Let me finish, darling. Hold up. People get ideas, and they don't cultivate those ideas, and they get rid of them too fast, and they don't deal with them in a business manner. And somebody comes along behind them and soups up their idea and perfects it and makes money on it. Mm-hmm. And that comes from not handling your business.
But it also comes from, if you don't copyright your idea right away, somebody can steal it. It's like
it's bigger than that.
For a company, and
it's bigger than copyright.
Right, and the company tells you anything you produce at this company is going to be the property of the company. So therefore, you know, if you're not able to patent your ideas at the time that you're an employee someplace, then the company has a right to take it from you.
But you know, you're
working for them.
That's right, your companies tell you up front.
Right.
What'd you say, Mike?
That is fair. Come on, they're paying you a guaranteed salary with health benefits and everything, and they're hiring you to do a job. And during the course of doing that job, you invent something. It belongs to the man who's paying you and feeding you. Now, if you want to be a real entrepreneur with that job, cut lawns or something, get a little side money, and then go develop it in your garage like the guys that built Microsoft.
I don't agree with that wholeheartedly, because a lot of times they take your ideas that, you know, I just had a conversation about this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What makes Google so successful is Google does not steal your ideas and become profitable on it. They partner with your ideas.
Yeah.
In the past paradigm of corporations, the idea of I'm not using your equipment for my idea. I'm making an idea in my basement.
Yeah.
And I'm working on something. I'm your secretary.
Uh-huh.
And you own it because I work for you, but I made it in my garage. I'm not for that.
No,
I don't agree with that.
But that's not usually the case, and those are defendable in court. If you didn't build them on company time with company resources and the idea was nothing that the company was supporting you to do, that is your idea. But the other thing, too, is why don't people copyright their ideas? Because you know why?
Well,
they don't believe in them, and they won't put
No, that's not true.
Money.
That's not true. That's not true.
Why don't they copyright?
Because a lot of times when you go to – you have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
People who are great mechanics who come up with great gadgets to get the tire off of their car,
mm-hmm.
those persons may not be business savvy enough, and we make stuff so complicated. It's like tax forms. We make it so complicated instead of just making it into a form where I take a picture of my idea and send it in. They want technical drawings and they want all this kind
no,
of stuff
no,
for me to
patent.
Get a trade.
That way.
I'm just saying, you can't copyright some intellectual property.
You can copyright all intellectual property. It costs $20. I do it all the time.
Mike, some things you still can't copyright.
Like,
you can't copy. They don't allow you to copyright recipes too often.
No, unless it's a very unique recipe.
Are you following me? So I got this great idea to replace, I don't know who I was talking to the other day, but to replace my liquid with Coca-Cola, but
yeah,
I can't copyright it. There's a guy who's selling Cronuts out in New York right now, and all it is croissant dough fried like a donut with vanilla cream filling, and he can't patent it. So now we've got all these other – it was his idea.
Mm-hmm.
But now Pillsbury is using it on their packaging,
mm-hmm.
and he's not getting paid for his idea because he can't copyright it.
Oh,
because he used their stuff.
No, he didn't. He created his own dough. There's not a patent on croissant dough.
I don't know that much about the baking industry.
I'm just saying.
But you know a lot about.
So what I'm saying, there are some things that it would be nice that you could be able to copyright. Or be able to trademark, but they don't give you the opportunity. It's like they don't give you that they don't simplify it so that everybody can – and that's a government regulation to keep people out.
Well, it didn't keep me out. I'm sorry. I found a simple way. And it was a black friend that shared it with me, by the way, Tracy, whose name
but
you would know.
Uncommon.
He is famous. Pardon?
You found out because someone told you. And, yeah, you can go online and copyright
now.
All day long for $20.
Yeah.
But I had talked to a young lady the other day, and she let this girl sing a song. And I asked her, did you copyright that before you sung it? She said, no. I said, well, you need to go talk to these people and ask them how many songs are out there copywritten by someone else but that they wrote.
Yeah. Yeah. And can I just share the information? It's the Writers
Guild
of America. It's and I use the one out west because, believe it or not, they're $5 cheaper than the one in New York City. And it's WGA West. Writers Guild of America West.org, and they got about 21 categories, and especially for me, when you look at the categories of intellectual property and how you could secure it, you can send them an audio tape, you could send them a CD, you could send them a typed up document, you could send them pictures, photographs, film, anything. It's on file, and for $20 you're registered and it's yours, and it's protected for so many years, and that's it. It's that simple. And it's very accommodating to the non-professional who's just the creative kind of artsy kind of person that has intellectual property.
Local call, your mic is on.
Yeah, how you doing, Trace?
Good. Yeah, and Mike, you're right. Go ahead, local call.
Am I on?
Yes.
I was listening to what you were saying on the radio about being able to copyright certain things. What you cannot do, and I read this, you cannot break certain laws and break four or five laws to copyright. You can't embezzle. You can't violate nobody's constitutional rights. You can't falsify information, and you can't You can't the fictional character law. I'm not talking about you. You can't come over a public broadcasting system and talk about somebody without saying their name. If they do that, was ever involved in that, then the person that you talk about, they automatically have control over it. That's the way it's supposed to be by law.
Oh,
this is what was done to me. So people are wondering why they get so much, because they violated a lot of laws in order to take something off me. Now, if they copywrote it, once I get an attorney, I can go back over all that because I got documents showing all that.
It depends. Right. It depends. Hey, Alabama, your mic's up.
No, I was just listening. I don't have too much to say. I have a friend of mine that does music, and he copyrights his stuff. But, I mean, just in the music industry, he wrote a book. Well, he read a book called Confessions of a Record Producer. And in that book, it breaks down the industry, what you should do, how you should go about doing things. And he was just saying that he's down there in Miami, he meets different people, and he told me he wants one of them to try to, R. Kelly stole a song from some people from Atlanta some years ago, and it wasn't copyrighted. So, I mean, you know, perish for a lack of knowledge. I mean, you just have to be, yeah, they've been copywritten. I would have waited right good till he released the song and sued him hard. I mean, I would have took him for millions because it was a hit between him and Usher called Same Girl. That was a stolen song. So people do it all the time. You just have to, you know, it's almost like entrapment. I want you to steal my stuff because I sue you. That's just me, though.
Hey, Alabama, we got to help Tracy here. We got to say an alleged stolen song unless it's already been passed through the court and proven.
No, that's been all on that's public knowledge. They played the song. They played the song right after the week it dropped, they played the original version in Atlanta on the radio, like, but these guys had a hit. It was a nice song, but it wasn't copywritten, and here it is. And they played it, same beat, same, just changed a few words, just lack of creativity, just lazy. And they didn't.
I mean, copyright infringement is a big problem, and people don't know. But when I say copy, the bureaucrats have made it very, very difficult for people to glean information. You just gave them a website, Mike, but a lot of people don't know the difference between a trademark. You know, they have ideas. Some things don't need to be trademarked, but they need to be patented. Going through the patent process is a patent process nightmare. It would cost thousands of dollars to get something very, very simple, like putting rubber bands and elastic.
But Tracy, that's because of lawyers. Lawyers are involved. Once they get involved, they got to get their fee. So, I mean, you go to court, for example, on a ticket, and a lawyer will charge you $200-$300 just to stamp something and put it over on the side. I mean, lawyers, they think, okay, I went to law school, I deserve X amount of thousands of dollars a day,
so
I'm going to charge.
But if you go to court without a lawyer, the magistrate and the judicial system and the judges will allow everybody to hose you because you go there without a lawyer.
I mean, I agree, but that's the thing. It's like a guild that they stick together. They have a little network, and they keep it where you can't really come in and negotiate. You could have something, and you could be right. You could have evidence, but because you don't have a lawyer on your side, it doesn't make a difference. You know, a police officer says you ran a stop sign and you didn't, then that's it. I mean, you just have to deal with the consequences, you know, regardless, unless you had the money for a lawyer.
Well, that's
but
like
the problem
consumer
is,
law on collection agencies
right.
and stuff. You go in there to face a collection agency. They might have broke 15 federal laws just to bring you to court because they didn't have standing in the action and they did this and did that. The judge can't turn to you and say, did you know that you've got this case? If you can do this, 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 it's not the court's job to educate you. It's your job to adjudicate based upon what that side puts up and what you put up. And that's the fairness and the unfairness of the system.
But if you educate yourself and you come with the knowledge to refute what they're saying, the judge is not – if they have a lawyer, the judge probably is more likely to listen to their lawyer because he's one of their – he's within that guild. So it's because most judges are lawyers or former lawyers.
Former lawyers.
And I've seen people give people leniency for having a lawyer even though the other person's right. That's just how it is.
It's just the bureaucracy of the system, and that's what I'm talking about. The bureaucracy of the system causes it to be the way that it is. And we need to come to the resolve that that's why we don't need to overregulate things, because when they overregulate them, they actually just block you out.
Well, look at Hong Kong. Hong Kong, you can get in business in an hour. They say it's like an hour. What it would take me to do weeks in America, they can go to one place, get all their paperwork, fill out all the signatures on all levels of government, state, locals, whatever they have the equivalency of that. And it can be done in an hour, 2 hours, and walk out, and it's done, and you're in business.
What type Alabama?
You can't even open up a lemonade stand in America without having to
go
out.
No. Alabama, sweetheart. Now that goes back into states' rights, because there are some states where you can go into business just that quick, and there are some states that you have to go through the bureaucracy of the state regulations that they will take you weeks and months. So
you're able to incorporate very quickly in Delaware, and you don't
that's
have to pay
what
a
I'm
lot
saying.
Of taxes. So that's where a lot of small
saying.
Businesses go to Delaware
even still,
and incorporate.
Tracy, what I was saying was that if you go and try to do, let's say we want to do a lemonade stand, now you're getting into the health department. I don't know, no state where you got, like, if you're dealing with food or anything that's going to be consumed,
it depends.
You got
to
go to the health
state.
Department.
That's every state, but you got to be careful with the food because you know food is bad. Hold on, I got to let me take a call and take a break. Local call, your mic is on.
Okay, hey Stacy, Tracy, how you doing?
Yeah. Good.
I was listening to that caller and he was saying that you if you don't have an attorney, you know, you pretty much can't do nothing. But in certain cases, I'm saying if it's evident to see that you are intentionally being stalled, and I'm not. To figure nobody, I'm not talking about nobody specific. It's evident to see that a couple of people conspired on you, stopping the progress, to do anything about like that, and they just can't have it. I mean, things that are just clear to see, you know what I'm saying? So, and that's all in accord to what I was saying. You cannot violate all the things like that.
Hey, listen, I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is open mic today. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll be right back.
News Talk 600 is working to help put our valley back to work. We've come together with local employers and training centers to connect job seekers with potential new openings and new careers. Visit our website and click on Features. That's where you'll find links to local companies and training centers, and you can even submit your resume right online. Putting our valley and America back to work. Visit 600WSOM.com.
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming. But Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own. That's where Turning Point Counseling can help for depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, personality disorders, crisis intervention, and more. Turning Point also provides residential services in our crisis stabilization unit.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren, the home for afternoons with Tracy and friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Dave Packer. In Cleveland, the families of the women Ariel Castro kidnapped will not have to sit through a trial. Instead today, a plea deal.
Do you understand, Mr. Castro, that upon entering this plea, you will never be released from prison?
I do understand that, and I stated that to Dave, what's his last name?
The agent,
Dave at Sex Crimes, that I knew I was going to get pretty much was thrown at me.
Castro held the three women captive in his home for a decade. The plea deal will keep him in prison for the rest of his life, but saves him from the death penalty. Castro had been scheduled for trial next month on a 977-count indictment. The Lincoln Memorial is getting a deep clean today after someone splattered green paint on the statue and floor of one of Washington's favorite monuments. Carol Bradley Johnson, a spokeswoman for the National Mall and Memorial Parks, calls the act shocking.
From a personal level, it breaks my heart is that somebody would do this, especially this year, 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. It's heartbreaking.
She says they should be able to reopen the memorial by tomorrow. Urging Russia to not grant asylum to NSA leaker Edward Snowden, Attorney General Eric Holder is laying the groundwork for extradition by making assurances to the Russians.
In an open letter to Russian authorities, Attorney General Eric Holder says Edward Snowden would not be tortured and would not face the death penalty if he was returned to the United States. Attorney General Holder says Snowden should not be granted asylum in Russia and could receive a one-way travel document to bring him back to America.
ABC's Vic Ratner in Washington. We're now hearing from one of the Americans on that deadly train derailment in Spain this week.
Last thing I remember is a feeling of leaving the tracks, and I blacked out in midair.
One American is among the 80 people killed in the derailment. Investigations are underway. The train driver is being questioned, and equipment is being looked at. It's a down day on Wall Street with the Dow Jones Industrial Average off 83 points. This is ABC News.
The Home Depot has Kiddo worry-free smoke and carbon monoxide alarms from just $24.97. A lithium battery keeps them working for 10 years so you never have to change batteries. With each smoke alarm designed for a specific room and the longest-lasting carbon monoxide alarm on the market, you can replace your older alarms today with Kiddo worry-free alarms starting at $24.97. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. U.S. only. See store for details.
I need to archive emails to comply with business regulations.
Do you have an IT guy to help search through thousands of PSD files?
No.
Got time to install a complicated product or create detailed reports?
No.
You okay paying storage fees to save duplicate emails and images?
No.
Offshore or automated phone tree support okay?
No.
Then yes, we can help.
The Barracuda Message Archiver lets you store and find emails fast to avoid compliance and litigation penalties. Easy setup and single instant storage will save you time and money. And if you need help, you'll talk to a live human. Try the Barracuda Message Archiver free. Go to barracuda.com/yes.
It's a board game for a new generation.
It was a good way to pass the time.
Let's go. Plus $200.
A lot of time. But for today's ultra-connected kids, an old-fashioned game of Monopoly just takes too long. Hasbro's listening and came up with a version for a new generation, Monopoly Empire, which lets you take control of Atlantic City in about half an hour. You can zip around the board with McDonald's fries, a Coke bottle, or an Xbox gamepad. And contrary to rumors, you can still go directly to jail unless you have that coveted get-out free card. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
In Milwaukee, a Brewers fan nearly kicked out of a game Wednesday. He changed his Ryan Braun jersey to read Fraud instead of Braun. The fan turned it inside out when security guards said the shirt violated the fan code of conduct. You're more confident about the economy than at any time since July of 2007. University of Michigan survey suggests that consumers will be bringing more growth into the economy in the months ahead as they spend more. The percentage of Americans who expect their homes to go up also up. Dave Packer, ABC News.
It's easier than ever to book a room and save with the Motel 6 app for your smartphone or iPad. Download it today and start saving big. No wonder they call them smartphones. Motel 6. We'll leave the lights on for you.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back, loss of hair, lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dynavite, he would go back to his hair loss.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite,
when I get to about 3/4,
oh no, I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
Each and every day she is getting that Dynavite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa, the digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Well, hello there, good people. This is your happy polka pal, Larry Walk.
And your happy polka gal, Diana Walk.
Inviting you to tune in our Happy Polka Land show, now heard here at AM 600 WSOM every Sunday afternoon, 1 to 4 p.m.
It's the musical antidepressant, featuring a custom blend of the latest in polka releases, as well as the polka picks from the past.
That's Larry Walk's Happy Polka Land, now heard here at AM 600 WSOM. Tune in for instant happiness.
Rusty Humphries.
More people coming out attacking the Tea Party, right? I'm starting to say, you know what? Democrats, bring it on. I want more attacks to the Tea Party. I want to see more hate coming from the left. Why? I want the Democrats to continue to show their true colors.
News Talk 600. Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
One day, child, I won't have to listen to your lies. On that day, I'll be able to make up my own mind. You know, I think I done finally realized. Yes, I have. And now I think I can put you out of my life. I'm gonna be free. Yes, I am. Oh, Lord. I'm gonna be a free child. I'm gonna be a free king. Oh, oh.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. I think Mike and Alabama and Philadelphia are on the line. I'm here in the studio. The number is 347-945-5229. We want to hear from you today.
Tracy.
If you get a chance over the weekend, and if you're anything like me, I like going out garage selling and secondhand shopping. Go check out Dull's Antiques and All down on South Avenue, 9026 South Avenue in Youngstown, Ohio. Go and say hi to Barbie Dull. It's on the corner of Western Reserve. You guys know I've been hanging out there for a while now. So on the corner of Western Reserve and South Avenue, and go and tell Barbie I said hi to Antiques and All. How you guys doing in the chat room?
Crazy.
Yes.
I wanted to kind of, yesterday, I don't know if Alex is listening, but you guys were going back and forth. I was listening. I was kind of busy yesterday, but I was listening about the whole point about being able to basically make it or succeed. And he was saying that you were disarming people by saying it's feasible. And I just wanted him to clarify, if he is listening, what specifically he meant by that, because it was kind of, I was kind of going back and forth. I didn't really get a chance to hear it. And that's why I posted that Carter G. Woodson quote on your page about controlling what a person thinks. So I just wanted to see what he thought.
You know, I don't know, and hopefully he'll call him before the day is out. But where I, this is my opinion, but where I think we go wrong is that we take people have been excluded from the system for so long that now that they're included, they can't believe it. It's, you know, it's like the elephant in the tree or the dog in the dog food. They have been brainwashed for so long to believe that they are not a part of the system and not a part of the United States and don't have power, that when they actually have power, they don't believe it. Would you guys disagree with that?
Yeah, that's definitely true, especially among low-income African Americans. Like I said before, they have an outcast mentality when it comes to thinking about America and the American system.
But Philadelphia, I think you're wrong. It's not, because the people that I've had conversations and my major debates with have not been low-income people.
Well, but even people of higher income, they're able to work in the system, but they probably don't feel that they're fully a part of it because they are black. Because they don't feel that black people are not a people who are completely embraced by America.
And that's what I'm saying. People of higher incomes still don't believe that first three words belong to them. They believe that there's still a we and a them. And as a matter of fact, if you talk to white people, they still don't understand the we and the them, because they say we the people, but them the politicians, like they're not a part of the process. The majority.
Mm-hmm.
A good majority. They don't believe that they are a part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Either. Because they have been indoctrinated to believe that it's us and the government, not realizing
right.
that they are the government. And they have disarmed people mentally so that they don't, and undereducated them societally, that they don't believe that they are part of the power structure of the people.
And the reason why a lot of immigrants come to this country and they do very well, because they come here for the opportunity to make money, and they feel that they can make a contribution to America. So when you have Indian people or Chinese people to come here, and the second generation, the family has moved to the suburbs, and they have a six-figure income, and they have a business, it's because they had a different type of mentality like when they first came to America.
But see,
that's
just
the difference.
People come over here and they understand it. They have not been brainwashed by the American education system and dumbed down. They come over here looking for the dream, where here in America, the dream is beat out of you before you can actually start participating in the process. And I think we indoctrinate our young people at an early age so that they do not understand just how powerful they are.
Who beats it out of you, Tracy?
I think society at large, if you look at your media, if you look at your school district, seriously, let's really look at what happens when we go to school and we are trying to be overachievers, how they try to slow you down into a process and put you inside of a box.
I think our system, our education system screwed up, because I actually wasn't called slow because I tested well. I just wasn't reading in front of people. I would get a lot of anxiety and I would stumble over my words. And I had teachers tell me I was dyslexic and all types of things just because I couldn't read out in public in front of people. I was scared, worrying about what people thought. And so
you and me both.
So that's the thing, but I could read if you tell me to read something and comprehend and answer questions, I could do it. So that's what stopped me. That's the only thing that saved me. But I had three teachers try that, because they would always have us read out, okay, read chapter four, read, start, Bill, start. and I would get nervous, and people would laugh. And that's, you know, once they get to laughing, it'll get even worse. So, you know, the education system is all twisted up because it's almost like if you fail, you know, you're supposed to learn. But in school, if you fail, you're stupid. So off the top, I'm like, well, if I fail, then it's going to say, okay, well, what did I do wrong? That's a foreign concept until you get in the workforce. So, and even in the workforce, that's not even, you know, depending on, like, in what I do, you fail, I mean, you're stupid. I mean, I work with people that think like that. I mean, I work with A-type personality people that think that, you know, that were always 4.0 students and always did well. As soon as I show I don't know something, I get pounced on. So I have to study. I have to be just, I have to study twice as hard, stay late, get there early, just to be competent enough so when I say something, I can go back and forth with. Otherwise, I've lost jobs or contracts because of that, because I would say, why is this? I don't understand. What does this mean? And you ask, and I'm talking about, you know, you've been there 4 days, and you're supposed to understand gigs of information like it's nothing. So, I mean, that's the type of, you know, environment. And you wonder why we're getting left by India in IT. That's why.
But again, we don't cultivate education. You know, you understand? I mean, when we don't celebrate education. We don't celebrate knowledge. We don't celebrate innovation. We don't harbor that. We don't cultivate it within our own communities at large, whether they be black or white. We celebrate entertainment and we celebrate dumb stuff. And as time moves forward, the dumber we celebrate stuff that's just dumb.
I don't know, Tracy. I think you go to any community, and any of the quote unquote black leaders in these communities are gonna stand up and say education, education. They're thinking education as far as an institution, get a degree, get a job. They're not thinking own something, right? Sign your own checks. I think that we have a lack of that. So everybody's not gonna go to college.
When I say education, I think people get the wrong idea. Education is, I'm not talking about education academia, where you've got to go and sit in a classroom. Education starts when you sit down in your kitchen and learn how to put a donut and a croissant together and call it a cronut and make a business. I'm talking about just plain old, how do you get a hustle on? Thinking outside the box. You know, I'm talking about, okay, I need a computer and I'm broke. How do I take this computer and that computer and that grandma and nana and all these people tore apart and build my own because I got to have one?
But you can actually build a computer cheaper than you can buy one, actually.
Absolutely. And you know that.
A lot of them don't have that spirit of being an entrepreneur that's in their community. They don't. They're not surrounded by that, whereas a lot of the Asian minorities, they have that in their families. So when they come to America, they automatically adapt to it.
But see, you keep on – listen to what I'm saying. I'm with you with the Asian community, but my issue is with the community right here in America, when do we start saying, I am going to start building within my own self? How am I going to be innovative because of the lack that I have and make something that I need? Because remember, inventions come from innovation.
If you read Richard Dad's success stories, most of the Caucasian stories, they would go to their family members and get money from their family. I'm like, well, I mean, of course you, but most black people, we don't have the resources.
If we had the resources,
we're living out in the east side of the suburbs.
But let me say this. Hold
people.
On. But listen, this is where innovation comes in. I don't have to have a lot of money from my resources to make it. Because if I believe in something, I'm going to find another way to sell something else, to make something else, to go buy something else, to do something else. I'll give you a great example. I saw a gadget at one of the stores here, and it was $49, and I ran into it in a closeout store for less than that. So I decided this upcoming weekend I'm going to get a table and be at a flea market, and I'm going to sell the gadget that I saw at this other store, and I'm going to sell it for half price because I'm trying to make some money to go somewhere else for my vacation.
I mean, I don't knock that. I mean, that's ingenuity. I mean, I agree
okay,
with that.
Okay, hold on.
I think that's great.
So are you following me? So what I'm saying is we've got to start learning how to – there's more than one way to skin the cat, so we got to go find a cat and start skinning him.
Well, I mean, but if you got people that say, that if you got people, and that's why I wanted Alex to call, because I was like, you got people that feel like we're going to get knocked down as soon as we try something, where they're going to knock us down. Who is that? You know what I'm saying? Then when you get into that mentality, then they don't, you can't have that mentality, what you just described. If you're going to have a can-do mentality, you have to be optimistic. You can't just be pessimistic. If you're pessimistic, then you're going to fail. Just like when I played basketball, there were guys that were, you know, at these schools that were supposed to be big recruits. If I ever got on that court and one of the guys on my team was like, man, I can't check him, man. He's just so good. Coach, get him out of here. He ain't got the right attitude. You got to believe in your heart that you can stop and check anybody, and that's how you got to believe in business.
But
that you can win. If you don't believe you can win,
you probably have to have the right
down.
Attitude, but I think the other caller was saying that you're basically in a system of white supremacy. You have to realize that when it comes to certain opportunities, that a person may not be able to garner because of the fact that you are of a certain race.
No. See, I got to tell you, I know I'm black, but just because I'm black, I'm going to overcome the obstacle. No matter what you put in front, no matter what hurdle you put in front of me, I know
Tracy,
I'm black.
Nobody's disagreeing with you, though,
Tracy. What type of system you're in as well.
Philly, I agree with Tracy on that. But my thing is, that doesn't necessarily mean that if you got 10% obstacles, the other person has 0%. That 10% does affect you. And I think what Alex was saying, and I would love him to call if he's listening, was that that you need to be cognizant of that. But that doesn't necessarily mean don't, because I don't think there's anything that I've never heard anybody list. Name something, Philadelphia, that I can't do that my skin color is going to stop me from doing.
No, I think what the other caller you're talking about was saying is that this is a system of white supremacy, and it's not just about the fact that I have the motivation and I'm going to be able to overcome every obstacle that's put in front of me. Of course,
yes, you are.
A person has to have the willpower to do so, but you have to have a full comprehension of the system that you're in.
Listen,
and
so
I think
what?
That's what he was talking
you'll
about.
You'll learn the rest. You'll learn the rest.
And what I'm
go.
Saying,
when you beat your head
against
the wall, you'll discover the wall there.
So
the
what?
I'm saying that you got to have the guts to just go do it. Never mind the obstacle. You know, there's sometimes
some
stuff you just set the goal. You know, Kennedy said we're going to land on the moon. At that moment, all the scientists threw up their lunch going, what are you, out of your mind? We don't have the technology. Guess what? We landed on the moon and did it in less than 10 years, and that's even after people got killed and everything, and they had to redesign the whole thing a year before they had a launch.
Well,
you know,
on top of that, also just to piggyback on that, there's a lot of things that in just about, if you follow most people, they've had to overcome, because doing what I do now, I ain't have any experience to be. I was told you can't do this, can't do that. I love when people tell me I can't do something. It just motivates me. So I agree that it's out there. I'm not crazy enough to say that if we don't live in that type of system now, because we do. But you can overcome it, individual, and as a people. You got to start getting into people's mindsets. But when you talk about as an individual, there's nothing that as an individual I don't feel like I can't accomplish. That's just me.
So you got to come live in my county. Not you, sir. The other gentleman who feels so unempowered. You got to come live in my county. It's 57% Black American. Down here, you do whatever you want. You got to
But sir, I'm not saying I don't feel
unempowered. Let him finish.
Was that he was trying to explain that the system of white supremacy is very real in this country, and that it's not just as easy as like 2 + 2 that somebody's going to be able to get to a certain goal if they don't have certain types of resources in place.
Philadelphia.
If they come from a particular
I'm going to say it one more time. I said this yesterday to Alex.
A particular racial group.
I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna say the same thing I said to Alex. This is the issue. So what if you don't want me to make it? You not wanting me to make it does not cause me not to make it. What happens is when you're not wanting me to make it makes me believe that I can't make it.
Philadelphia. Let me ask you this: if I'm motivated, if I have ambition, fire on the inside that I just feel like nobody's going to stop me, I want it bad. You telling me I can't make it?
I mean, what are you saying?
I'm not saying that you cannot make it. I'm saying that you have to be realistic about the system that you're in. And the fact of the matter is that when other groups of people come to this country, they have a better understanding of the way that the country operates than people who are Black Americans do. Black Americans,
I'm not talking about them. I'm not talking about
they don't
them.
Have the same types of structures
Philly, Philly,
in place
you're going
inside
left to the
their
point,
communities.
Philly, you're going left to the point. I never said I'm talking about an individual. I'm not talking about the whole of Black people because you got a point, but that's a mentality thing, and I agree with you. But I'm talking about as an individual, me, Bill Green, if I want something, what's going to stop me? If I want something, if I make up my mind and I have the desire, and I'm not going to give up until I get there. That's my attitude, right? What's going
to
stop me?
That's probably true in any aspect of life. You have to have the sense of determination to get to your goals. But you also have to have goals that are in you have to be real about your goals. You have to understand what obstacles that you could face.
Philly, let me tell you the difference in the process of trying to attain your goals. But see, let me tell you what I hear in your voice. What I hear is be realistic. When I hear be realistic, that's the most commonly true road to mediocrity. Why be realistic? You want to be realistic, you'll get the same results everybody else get. You have to think outside the box. You have to believe that you can do something. You have to be delusional. You do. You have to believe that you're going to get different results from the next person. I ain't saying don't be cognizant of what they went through. I'm not what I'm not saying is don't be cognizant of what's out there. I'm not saying that. But don't tell me that I can't do anything because of some obstacle that's there. Because if it's there, it's an obstacle, which means it can either be around, over, or through. But there's a way through it and past it. It's just I have to figure out which way it is. And it's an attitude. But when you say you need to be realistic, man, just lower your goals, lower your expectations. You're Black. Hey, people like that, you're going to have a mediocre life.
And so what happens is I say I can't do it because a white man got his foot on his neck because every time I try to do something, he don't let me do it. They're never going to let you compete with them. This is capitalism.
And everybody keeps thinking being white is this great get-out-of-jail-free card in the United States. It's not.
It is.
White people get put down by other white people. You got to work your way up through even the white social system in this country. If the dream
Hold on,
is
Mike.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Mike,
I'm
what are you saying?
I'm just what the gentleman is saying about,
I thought you,
you know,
white,
white
don't you know,
structure.
No, Mike, don't you know white people don't never have no problems?
I know that. I get my newspaper for free, and I don't ever get my electricity turned off, and I've never had a struggle ever a day in my life for a penny, and nobody's ever told me the word no when I went to town hall to try to register a business or get started.
Let me ask you a question. Are you cognizant that it's harder for me than it is for you, though? Can you at least admit
Definitely, because you've got to work through two systems. You've got to work through all the negativity in your own community, and then you've got to come and interface with the white negativity. I understand that. But what I'm saying is it doesn't make it impossible, like Philadelphia is saying. And as far as the Asian people go,
He didn't say impossible. Philly wasn't saying impossible. He's just saying lower your expectations. Be realistic because you're
Black. And to lower your expectations, you know, what are you going to do? Instead of aim at the moon, you're going to shoot for the garbage pail? I mean, that's silly. I agree with you, Alabama, on that you can't lower your expectations. If the dream is big enough, the facts don't matter. And it's better that you died trying than you died mediocre. It really is, because it's more for your children and your family to respect than at least.
I mean, life is boring. To me, life is boring if you're not going after goals. And I can't just go through life aimlessly, just living day to day, get a house and a car and be married and have kids and that's it. No, I want more than that. And I'm not going to stop till I get there. So, I mean, my mentality is a little different than, you know, a lot of people, not just Black. It's a lot of people that just, they're content. And if that's what you want in life, then fine. But if you want something else, you want a legacy, you want to do something, then you might have to do stuff that's going to get you laughed at, that's going to look a little backwards.
Yeah.
But you do the right things because you want to be able to do what other people can't do. They say, what is it, 1 in 835 people are millionaires? That 1 in 8, the other 834, they all think the same. Most of them.
Or
100
of them work for the millionaire. But, you know, Alabama, I will take issue with what Philadelphia said about Asian people. They don't come to this. No immigrant comes to this country fully understanding what it's going to be like to be an immigrant. Because, come on, nobody ever heard of the discrimination. Nobody ever heard Asian people called derogatory words. It's because they come here not knowing what's going on.
Yeah,
they
just
go out and try. They run into it, but their goal, their dream to try and live the American dream, the fantasy they heard about that made them come here is what helps them succeed, like Alabama's saying.
Yeah, hello.
You can't be your own worst enemy.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what I wanted to answer that, a lot of the Asians that come from India and China and they go into the high-tech or high-skilled fields, they are recruited by the American colleges over in the countries that they come from. They take all of the standardized exams they need to take over there. They have people who are friends of theirs who live in this country and family members who tell them exactly the types of things that they're going to face as soon as they come to America. So I'm saying that to say
so you're saying it's like that for
they
the whole,
definitely
the whole
know exactly what's
going to
happen as soon as they come, like as soon as they come to this country.
No, you have
so,
to.
So that's why they're able to
I'm
move
let you talk,
into
Philly,
these
Philly,
different
I make this point right
very
Philly.
Easily.
Philly.
Whereas
you know
we're
what?
Talking
he
about Mexicans that are basically farmers, they basically move into low-skilled jobs.
Philly, you're right.
Because
you're right,
because
you don't believe it.
Them
you don't believe it,
people who are
you don't get those same
industry,
results.
They are recruited to move into jobs as farmers and so forth. And so when people come here, they definitely have an idea of what to expect.
Okay, well, Philly, what I was trying to say was, what is it, Confucius, he who says he can, he who can't, are both usually right. I agree with you. That for you, that's your reality. You don't believe, you think it's an excuse, it's a reason
no,
why it's the scene.
Sir, I'm
not
saying that. What I'm saying is that I'm not saying anybody, and you know, anybody can reach a particular goal they're trying to reach. It all depends upon them. I'm saying that if you are in this country and you don't have those same types of things in place in terms of structure that other people that who happen to come to this country have, who move into different industries in this country, you have to be realistic about the obstacles that are going to be in front of you. And it's going
well,
to be
what
different
are, oh,
than
no,
what
no,
other
no. You
people
just made
face.
A point. You just made a point, though, Philly. I want to hear you explain. I'm in IT. I come from – I'm working right next to a lot of these people. What did they have that what did I have? What did I have in common with them? Why am I here?
All right, well, you know –
because we all talk about individually, right? So I want to know why can an individual who – dad was a painter, my mom was a beautician. How can I work with these quote-unquote Indians and – since they're so smart, I mean, I just want to understand why I'm able to get out here and compete with them.
Well, I mean,
I don't have all that infrastructure.
But also, I mean, like you have to. But basically, you know, each person is an individual, and people have different levels of motivation. And I'm not just talking about the IT industry. You have the industry of, you know, like things, like in terms of economics or engineering or whatever, these people are able to move into these industries in this country because they do have those different types of structures in place, and they're coming from their home country.
It's not just a structure.
And their home
country
is able to prepare them to come to America as well.
Philly, anybody with the motivation, if they want to sit down and read IT and study, can get an IT job. Just by most of them, 90%, because it's that much of a demand for IT. They don't have enough people with the skills to do stuff. So, believe me,
blacks should be doing things to get the best out of group success rather than individual success.
Right.
That's what Philadelphia is trying to say.
I can't change people that don't want to read. If you got people, you try to tell them stuff, they only want to read.
India, back in the late 40s, India took whole populations, towns, and trained them in ITC schools.
Over in India, they
colleges.
Blacks have
they prepare their students to basically take all of the graduate standardized exams they would face in America. These junior colleges are all over the country of India. They prepare their students to major in different types of subjects like science and math or engineering before they ever come to America.
Philly, I hear what you're saying, but all I'm saying is that the certification test and all this different stuff is that we can do the same thing if we just try. We're not even trying. So how do you know what we can do if people don't even have a mindset? I didn't disagree with you on the mindset.
I keep saying that blacks have a tremendous economic market that they don't control. That would be the obvious thing. The things that you wallow around in for subsistence and consumptions, you should control. You got to start moving people out.
But you got to have a mindset. And we have been indoctrinated because we're back. And I went and took a break while I let you guys go. And St. Pianchi, it's good to hear from you. Hey, the number again is 347-945-5229. And the local code number is 330-781-9600. The problem that we have is they indoctrinate you to believe that you cannot compete. So you need to go get an education, no matter what it is, to come work for someone else. They don't tell you to become innovative. They don't tell you to start your own business. And they don't even teach you economic development in your own homes in school anymore. They don't give you an honest education about the political process, how to make things work, because they want to keep us ignorant. It is programmed to keep you undereducated so that you don't know what the heck is going on across the board.
Something as simple as an ambulance service in your own city. Why should a outside ambulance service not only serve your portion of the city, but also serving all the surrounding county? It's kind of crazy.
Pianchi, wait a minute. I called a tow truck yesterday, and I called AAA. They called a tow truck all the way in another county to come to see about me, and all I needed was my lugs tightened on my car. I mean, do we really understand that people do, and they block you out? All the vacant property inside the city of Youngstown, but yet you don't own a scrap yard anywhere. I mean
that's opportunity. That's an opportunity right there. I mean, because they all over where I'm from. So, I mean, that's just opportunity.
Miss Tracy, you better check your lug nuts more often, because it means someone's after your tires.
Oh, man.
They don't
normally
loosen it up.
Don't mention it. That's a whole other story. I'm just saying, we really need to become innovative about what's going on in our own cycle and not take no for an answer.
Yeah.
Hell, we got a local. We have a grocer here, which is a major grocer. And they sponsored a farmer from way up in Iowa to come here to start growing certain produce that they was apparently having difficult getting from other areas, I guess down in South America. Mm-hmm. But for a farmer to come, bring operations here, set them up, and start producing right in your own backyard to supply a major grocer that you buy the produce from is just totally ridiculous to me.
I mean, what he just said, I don't disagree at all. I think we should pay attention to what we're doing with our dollars in our community. And we can't just think that, you know, it's just we live in a vacuum. We don't. I mean, I'm breaking bread with every other race of individuals but my own people. And then, like, one of the things I hate to hear is black people do business sloppy. Go in some of these own gas stations and hotels and see how sloppy and poorly they're put together and ran. We still patronize them. So if theirs is sloppy and you patronize, it should be the same thing for black owned. But there's a tax you have to pay with your own people that I think we have to add. Because when I had a comedy club, people had a lot less patience with me than they did with other businesses. I noticed it. Like, people would come in and complain over the smallest thing. And they were very disrespectful, but they go to a white man business. Could you please hit it? I mean, they're very nice, courteous. It's a difference. And I think that tax you have to, it's almost like you have to step up to the curve and have everything together for them. It needs to be perfect.
Alabama.
And they may patronize you.
But see, this is the issue. That comes, again, with the indoctrination of our own community and our own families. I have watched people, and I said to someone, I talked to a lady the other day, and there's a guy who has a heating and cooling company, and he's a one-man stop. Don't get me wrong. Everything he does himself. He is it, and he's good at what he does. The problem is he's only one man, and people are calling him from all over. And he's doing everything by himself and trying to find somebody to come and work for him so that he can teach them the craft and the trade, and getting them to come to work and being reliable and being on time is very, very difficult.
It is.
Okay. So they called him on the phone and they said, listen, Mr. He didn't call them right back. Now, you put my unit in, my heater in 10 years ago, and you want me to know your name, know who you are and where you live. Because you did business for me, and he was nice to you. I said, well, he ought to remember me. Well, why should he remember me? Well, I did business with him. You don't ask the other companies, and they send out somebody new every time they come out. So why do they have to know your name and call you right back, yet you want to get a discount?
Mm-hmm. I ran into the same thing being blind. I was supposed to give him a discount, do better work, be totally available, have no private life, and put up with any insults on the job or any bad blind jokes that they thought they had the right to tell me. And you guys all, Alabama, you know what I'm talking about, because I'll bet you being black had to go through the same crap. I mean, I used to arrive at a job, and the next morning, my helper would tell me there's a pamphlet in your toolbox. You leave the tools on the job on some big job, and the pamphlet would be from Home Depot, how to do what they just hired me to do, like I didn't know what I was doing. But you just suck it up and you say, I'm here for my dream. Their money will go to the bank as good as anybody else's, and I'll just put up with their ignorance because I'm working on my dream.
Well, Tracy, you made a point a second ago that I thought was real interesting. You saying this guy can't find any laborers. I'm willing to bet if you get rid of a lot of these government programs, a lot of these welfare and Section 8, all these different programs, or you start cutting back, I ain't going to say get rid of altogether, then people are going to show up for work because they ain't going to see no other way out. And they're gonna be respectful. They're gonna show up and start. Their attitude's gonna change. I was watching a show. A guy named Sean Bankhead. He's a choreographer. He had a show down here in Atlanta. And the parents showed up, and they were checking him, talking to him like it was nobody. And I'm like, this is this guy's show. This is his organ, his structure, his thing. And they come in there talking to him. Why? Because he's a young black guy. They see it, and these black parents coming in there. Screaming, talking to him. I'm like, he's in charge. And they're teaching their kids not to respect him. So the daughter started pouting and talking to him crazy because the mama was talking to him crazy. Then when she get out there in the workplace, she gonna have some issues because she doesn't. You're not teaching them to respect authority. So, you know, this stuff is home training.
But let me say this. Don't we understand? You know, I look back at my grandparents and my mom. And the Jim Crow and the crow that they had to eat just to get me where I am today. I mean, I can't fathom going to work and busting my butt and not being able to leave the job that I'm on because if I leave, they're going to say that I'm a thief. And you're going to treat me really, really bad while I clean your house and wash your toilets and wash your walls and polish your silver. And then you're going to loan me out to your friends, not pay me anymore, and I have no negotiation in this process. Right. You're going to call me what you want to call me, and if the master of the house or the man of the house pats me on my behind, ain't nobody going to believe he did that, and I can't do anything about it. And you bow your head, you cry at night, and you go back and you do it again. I don't understand that. I can't comprehend how my parents and my grandparents made it through all that. But today, I can't comprehend that I can't take something to get to where I want to go so that I can make it better for the generation behind me.
But, you know, things nowadays is very difficult because you have technology that they've knock the heck out of everything. Look at Walmart. Now, you still have markets amongst the poor who can't get to a Walmart, but the upper middle class and anybody else is going to Walmarts and shopping. And, they have a program here called Mosaic where they're talking about bringing in immigrants for jobs. For high paying jobs, not low paying jobs. I'm talking about high paying jobs.
Right.
And the question would be, why come you don't train Americans? But technology, they're even using robots now to pick apples and peaches and harvest lettuce. And
that also really with change. The advent of the internet, they're able to advertise those high-skilled jobs all the way over in their home country. Those immigrants know about those jobs, and they're not even in America. So,
well, what they
know,
do
that's
in
why
those
I'm
countries,
saying that
Alex,
when they come to America, they have a system in place for them. And
yeah, what
they
do
is
they target those jobs.
Right.
And absolutely. But
they
know
exactly
what they're
jobs.
Doing when they come over here.
But they spend $1 billion on advertising and telling people how to get on public assistance here while they actually are working this way. Hey, Alex, they've been calling you out, so since you're on the phone, you might as well just jump in. Because you got some explaining to do to people.
Well, I'm driving right now, so it might I don't want to cause too much noise on your show.
Oh, okay. He's driving. But go ahead and ask him the question, and we'll tolerate a little wind if he blows up them windows.
Yeah, I was just wanting him to explain about did he see the Carter G. Woodson quote that I placed on Tracy's page? I tagged him in it. And I just wanted his insight on it.
Yeah, I saw it.
What did you think?
And
Alabama, do me a favor. Do you have the quote in front of you?
I don't. I'm outside right now.
It says if you can control a man's thinking, you do not have to worry about his action. When you determine what a man shall think, you do not have to concern yourself about what he will do. If you make a man feel that he is inferior, you do not have to compel him to accept an inferior status, for he will seek it himself. If you make a man think that he is justly an outcast, you do not have to order him back to the back door. He will go without being told. And if there is no back door, his very nature will demand one. Carter G. Woodson, The Miseducation of the Negro.
And all this is designed to keep people from competing.
And it's all about commerce.
Yeah, Carter G. Woodson, he literally changed my life. When I was a teenager and I was exposed to him, that book is timeless, Miseducation of the Negro. And that quote is very true. I mean, I think that's one of the main ailments of our people today is that very thing, is that they don't have to worry about us, which is why largely both Democrats and Republicans ignore us until it comes to, well, and Democrats only pay attention to us, to black people, when it comes around to election, to go to our church and talk in some southern dialect and shake some hands. But that's the reason why we're ignored, because our they've already conditioned our thinking a long time ago. And so they already know what we're going to do and how we're going to respond to certain things. So, I think that quote is very true. And it's been true for a very long time, I would say.
All right. And I know it's to be true. The question is, can you overcome the trueness of the quote? That's the issue. Because right now, we have so much fallen inside of that quote that we're drowning.
Well, Hitler said it best. Leaders have it really easy. All you have to do is tell a lie, keep it simple, and repeat it often enough, and everybody believes it is the truth sooner or later, and it will become their truth. And I'm with Alabama on several issues today. I just got to say, I just can't live a life feeling that defeated before I even at least try. I wouldn't want to live. I believe tomorrow will be better than today. And I believe the next day will be a little better than that. And to not believe that way is to believe that tomorrow then would be a little worse than today, and the next day is a little worse, and in 6 months your life's a living hell. Well, you might as well slit your wrists now. I don't see a pessimistic future. Not as long as we can talk openly and we can help each other.
I wasn't listening in earlier, but I'm assuming that the premise that's been laid out in your show today is that African Americans particularly have a defeatist attitude. Is that what it is?
Well, it happened with your comment yesterday, because remember I was saying it takes hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And hard work will make you an overcomer, and you can win. And you calling in saying, you know, I was giving them a delusional view.
I think what you said was fine, but I think that you have to either preface it or add an addendum to hard work, because we can't work hard like everybody else. Anybody can come to this country, whether it's Mexicans, anybody who is visibly of lighter skin than us can come to this country and work hard, and they'll get similar results. But we cannot work hard the same way that other people do. We will not get the same results. And that's my point, because of the culture of white supremacy. That's just the way it is. When nobody... it's because it's the same reason that George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin in that street in Sanford, Florida. It's because there is and Dr. Francis Cress Welsing wrote about this thoroughly. There is an intrinsic fear that people have. They feel threatened by black men, and so when a black man can act the exact same way as a white man, have the exact same mannerisms and behavior, but the same assertiveness that comes from a black man will be perceived as threatening. And so and all I'm saying is that, yeah, we need to work hard, but it needs to be tactfully, because so many brilliant black men have been chopped down by this society with that same delusion that all they have to do is work hard.
I'll say it this way. Hard work never hurt anyone.
Well, you gotta have a plan too.
But lack of work hurts everyone. And we have become so complacent in lack of work. I mean, anytime our work ethic has become that which it is, and I'm not talking about just black people, I'm talking about America in general, but black people, and when you look at them, you can't cut grass and bust a sag at the same time and actually take pride in the job that you're doing. It doesn't work.
Tracy, I didn't have that much time, Tracy, because I had to go, but I see Alex's call.
The point I wanted him to expound upon, because I hadn't been able, I was back at my desk, I was just trying to get him to expound upon what is it that I cannot do as a black man today? What is unobtainable? What can an individual as me as a person, Bill Green, from Montgomery, Alabama, what can I not obtain because I'm black? That's what I want to hear.
Let's be careful. I mean, don't put words in my mouth. I didn't say that there's anything that you can't attain. I just said that you're going to have to go about it differently. But I can give you a bit, for instance, if you are a black man in a professional setting, you can, you know, to take leadership, when it comes to leadership, if you have the same assertive behavior, the exact same assertive behavior as a white guy that people admire, you will be perceived as threatening.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, there's a situation now where a guy speaks, he talks with a certain tone when you come to him. Is there something you don't understand? I've only been on this project, 5 weeks, 6 weeks? Every time I ask a question, he has an attitude. Now, if I have an attitude, they're going to get scared like I'm going to hit them in the mouth. Because I'm about, 220, bigger than everybody, taller, deeper voice. So I have to be careful, and I'm black. So, yeah, I'll give you that. I won't disagree with that. I'm just saying, yeah, there are some things that me being black is I'm going to have to do a little bit different because I'm black and a male. I'm going to have to do things a little bit different than a Caucasian counterpart. I mean, that's just a fact. Now, but that doesn't mean I can't do it, because right now I feel like we as African Americans are the wealthiest. We are the wealthiest people on earth, and we can do things. It can be done. It's going to be harder than but we can't watch everybody else. It's going to be harder for me, but that doesn't necessarily mean it can't be done. That's all I was trying to get to. I got to go back in, though.
Well, there's a lot of things that blacks can't do, but the name it.
Well, you can't. You can't do it because you don't think you can. And I mean, that's cool.
No,
I mean,
it's not. It's not that you don't think you can. You got to face reality. You as a black.
People like you,
let me ask you a question.
Can
you go out and erect a 100-story building?
Can I erect a 100-story building?
Yes.
Not today, but tomorrow.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, what are you trying to say? You just want to find the most.
No, I asked you. Can you go out and erect?
If that is my goal, yes. For every question you ask. I'm going to say yes to everything.
You go out and erect a 100-story building.
I don't want to erect a 100-story building. So what are you trying to do?
If you're in a particular profession a long period of time, you realize what goals that person is able to attain and what goals they aren't able to attain.
There's certain areas.
That's a way of life.
You're going to be lackluster because you think like that. You don't think it's obtainable.
Well,
like
I have erected buildings like that.
Yeah,
but I'm telling you.
I'm sorry? Okay, then.
Oh, my
God. So
goodness.
You proving my point. You black, right?
No,
so
I'm saying you won't let me finish. That's another thing. If you don't make things work on paper, it's not going to work in reality. What do you want, crazy?
Listen. I really got a show to work, and I want to pull up two calls before I go to break. Hold up, 207. Your mic is on.
Oh, how you doing, Trace? Just give me a call there. Is your guest? What is his name? Mike.
They're all on. Everybody's on.
Okay. Well, my question is directed to that gentleman right there. You know, I'm listening to what you're saying. And I just want to ask you a question.
Reg, you got to go inside or something. That's you, I think.
I can't hear.
Somebody got their window down or something. I can't hear.
Keep talking.
Go ahead,
okay.
Reg.
All right. I was just going to ask him, do you think that Caucasian people have it harder than black people in this country?
No.
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 Okay.
No one would argue that who has a brain.
All right. I'm just, you know, because...
Well, white folks get knocked on their butt, too.
Hold on, Bianchi. Hold on.
I'm hearing all these hard luck stories and stuff in general, and I just, it just seemed like you were saying in a roundabout way, and forgive me if I'm wrong, you already corrected me to say that you're not. I'm glad to hear that. That's what it sounds like. So that was my basic reason, calling.
Also, I wanted to give an example here in
Philadelphia. No, Philadelphia, no. I got to pull up some new calls. Bonnie, your mic is on.
I just wanted to say hello anyway to Philadelphia because that's my home where I'm from,
I know.
And came here.
Uh-uh.
But
I don't have that kind of time.
Say hi to Philadelphia.
Bonnie, your mic is on.
All right, thanks.
Hi, Tracy. I was in yesterday. I was with you guys yesterday when this conversation came up. And, I feel as though I don't have anything to contribute, even though I truly do. You know, I was in a situation that I explained last time I called where I actually started employment. I was waitressing. You know, you can work for other people. And Alabama said, two really great
putting
points.
America
that no
and
one
our
else
valley
brought
back
up.
To work. Recognizing local companies and business owners that are generating new ideas and innovative concepts that are helping to lead our valley's workforce in the new economy.
For more than 15 years, InfoCision has been a part of our area with locations in Austintown, Boardman, and Newcastle and stands out from the competition.
Well, we have an incredible benefits package that includes medical, dental, and vision coverage. We have our on-site fitness centers and doctor's offices. We offer the 401ks where they can invest in their future. We have competitive pay rates.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren. The home for afternoons with Tracy and friends. News Talk 600 WSOM. Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Dave Pack.
Hi, are you guys there?
Yeah, we are. Can we, Bonnie,
okay.
Can we add something to Alex?
Yeah, I didn't realize. I didn't hear Tracy say that she was going on break, so I'm
sorry.
Some of
these breaks are hard.
She's at the top of the hour. It's a hard break.
Yeah, it's
oh,
a hard break.
Okay.
When a hard break slams in, she can't stop it. They just take her off the air because they're paying for the news. You know?
Well, that makes
now,
sense.
Now we can go by it, but we don't usually.
Is that Jeff?
Yes.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi,
I haven't
Jeff.
Heard you all day today.
And I'm supposed to be there, but I have a series called Jazz in the Park. And some kind of preparation for that is extreme, like it was today, and I couldn't get in. And I didn't even get to tell her I wasn't able to get in. So that's why I called in and announced that. And then, you know, I'm hearing what you guys are saying, too.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I just. Bonnie, go ahead. Say what you were going to say to Al, or do you want to wait till we're
well,
back here to tell
no,
Al
what I was, what I was wanting, you know, I was there yesterday when you guys were talking, and I actually started, you know, making a better living for myself, and I can relate to so many things that come on the show because I've been shot down, you know, and people told me I couldn't do it, and
uh-huh.
You just persevere. But I actually started my business from my closet. I mean, you know, and Alabama said two things that really made me think. He said his mom was a beautician and his father was a painter. And I think I have it right. And see, they were people who had to give a good service. So Alabama grew up watching that. And see, that's how I feel. My mom did some mending for people, and she would do some baking and you know, little small jobs. My father would go around after his full-time job, and he would work at the local farms. And he
uh-huh.
gave a service. And people, you know, when you grow up like that, and, you know, Jeff, don't you do the same thing kind of? You give a service. Aren't you in music, too?
Yeah, absolutely.
And are you
music and sound. Huh?
Yeah, but we're not talking about those types. We're talking about bigger industries where you're going to put 50, 100, 150 people to work.
Well, you know, but
well,
you got to start. And you know, when you have nothing, nothing.
Hey, Bonnie.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? This is Alex.
Yeah.
I completely hear what you're saying because, I mean, I've had my own consultancy for 5 years. My own small business doing engineering consulting and contracting, and I'm a product designer, and I do good work, which is why that's the only reason I've been able to stay in business. So I completely understand what you're saying, but when it comes to the problem is so complex. Because when you're talking about the way that, when it comes to capital formation, capital formation, when it comes to getting financing, and I'm talking about for larger endeavors when you're like Bianca
right.
said, when you're trying to create jobs and build your community and things like that, that's when, you know, When I say the system or culture of white supremacy kicks in, yeah, everybody likes to see you do a good job because I'm doing a good job for them. And, yeah, I mean, if you're doing, you know, you're doing work for somebody, so, yeah, they want you to do good work for them because they're paying for the service. But when it comes to us actually creating an infrastructure for self-sufficiency, then all of a sudden things change then.
Those mechanisms exist in blacks to put that together. You just have to be willing to target something, then put everything together. My payroll was $250,000 a month. So but I had a black banker at the time, and I mean, we had a black mayor at the time. So you have to take advantage. If you don't have everything that you need, you have to be able to put it together to make it happen.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I can tell you that I've had several business deals, and you know, the ones I can tell you that the ones that are brokered by or partnered with certain people of a certain hue, they tend to have no problem. You know, because I only deal with people who are qualified and who are good, upstanding citizens. But if they're not of a certain hue, then you know the business deal just isn't going to go through because they end up.
You're absolutely right. We had a friend of mine, Mike Robinson, his brothers. They put up a 20-story office building downtown St. Louis. And they couldn't get financing in St. Louis. They had to go outside of the city in order to get the money.
Right.
So those are things that you just have to face.
Hey, just here, when you want to build a house, it's the same thing. You cannot get a certain loan, no matter how good your credit is. I had excellent credit. But the problem was they still weren't going to loan to an African American in the neighborhood I wanted to build it. Other than me, there's no other black person out in my neighborhood to build this house.
I had been in business for several years, and I said to myself, let me go over here to Boatman's and act as if I'm just starting. I went on to Boatman's, talked to the commercial lender, and showed him my business plan. Came back in a few days. He said, sorry, we don't think this is going to work. And I didn't say nothing else. But I had already been in business with Mercantile at the time.
Yeah.
So, yes, those racist things do happen. They still occur today. You just have to be able to move around.
Yep. You have to keep moving around. And, you know, and that's where my political leanings helped me. Because, you know, politically I was able to, this one banker took me to a different bank. And he said, you go here, they're going to give you the loan. Now, my loan got pre-done just like, you know, for other people's loans do. You know what I'm saying? There's already a bygone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
A question. Have any of you been told this? When something derogatory has came your way in business, in a business plan, I mean, it can be anything that comes to your mind when I ask this question. And when you say, you know what, this is, you know, you kind of question, you know, the fairness in it, or you think it's a little discriminative, or, you know what I mean, you have this gut feeling. And you come out and say it. Have you ever heard them, whoever it is that's coming back, say something like this? Well, that's just the way it is. Have any of you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I can't speak for anybody else, but in my experience, when it comes to when you're doing business, when you're doing business deals, people do not people don't invest or make deals based on necessarily what's on paper. I mean, that's really just a prerequisite. What people invest in is they invest in people. And so they invest in the team or the management and things like that. And so you can have the best business plan in the world and say, yeah, I'm backed by you can have, you know, pretty much the best you could have thought out everything.
But what it comes down to is if they like you. And so I don't really know any other way to say it. I mean, people don't invest in what's on paper. I mean, they say that. They make you do it so that as a charade of so it can be like so it can seem fair or whatever, but it isn't. That if you have an honest conversation with any investor, they'll tell you they do not invest in ideas or what's on business plans. They invest in people in the management team. And if they don't like you, you're not getting
in the business plan.
Do that to you to say. You know, it's just the way it is when something doesn't go. Have they said that to you?
More or less. I mean, and...
So have I. Now, do you think that is?
Because it's true.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And doesn't it just make your stomach turn when you've been working so hard for something? And somebody, just because of whatever it is they have their little hang-up about, they say, nah, it's just the way it is. And you have to go,
find someplace else and do the good job,
knowing you can do the job.
If somebody has a radio on, they're going to turn it down.
They're thinking. They send you out the door.
You know, it wouldn't – see, I wouldn't it wouldn't be a big deal, I would say, to most people, particularly black people, if it wasn't something where, you know, just considering the historic grievance behind it, and also the fact that even when we do happen to do for ourselves, even the government will step in and destroy our infrastructures. And it has happened more than once. It's happened at least, you know, three major times in this country where when we try to set up our own commerce, our own trades, our own banks, this own government will come in and destroy it, but then won't even hear our petitions for reparations. And so it's things like this that other people just simply have no clue about. They cannot relate. And it's nothing against you or anything, but I just don't think that your experience can relate to that of black people who have to start over every generation. I mean, I don't know if you can fathom that if you have a group of people that have to start over, there's no generational wealth being passed. They have to start over every generation. I think it's a crime against humanity. And it just goes unrecognized, unspoken, not talked about.
Alex, when was the last time this reset happened in your historical knowledge?
I would say just recently a report came out that that white people have, I think it's like 15 or 20 times more savings than the median black person. Median white person has 15 to 20 times more savings, and their net worth is 15 to 20 times more than the median black person, and that's across any educational level or whatever. And right. So we don't realize that, like, when you have say 2 decades of war on drugs. Mm-hmm. Where, like, just in the 90s alone, you incarcerate 1 million black men. Mm-hmm. And so then now, 10, 15 years later, you have all these black women asking, where are our men at? How can you create a strong, stable community when you remove all the black men and then put felonies on them so that now they cannot even operate as men in society? But people will say, well, they chose to do that. But see, here's the thing. It's illegal to spit on the sidewalk. But the reason why it doesn't matter is because the police doesn't enforce it. Mm-hmm. Now, if the police choose to enforce certain laws in black neighborhoods but not white neighborhoods, then they effectively become black laws, mm-hmm. You know, laws just for the blacks and not for the whites. And so – now you've destroyed one, you know, at least two generations of black men who are supposed to be leading their families, and there, it's something that you'll never be able to get that back. You know,
actually, it's genocide.
Pianki, hold on, because Mark is sitting over here looking like he got perplexed. Along, Mark Manji stepped in, and he's sitting in the studio.
Yeah, hi guys, how you doing?
Hi, Mark.
You're going to have to bring me in on the conversation a little bit on this one. Two generations of males in the household, where did they go? You said you've lost two generations of males.
Absolutely. From the 70s, you have to look from the 60s, when they erased the male, the black male out of the home.
Yeah.
From the 60s and the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
And they made it to where more babies and no men made more money.
Yes.
What they did was they emasculated the man inside of the home so he could no longer function.
Yes.
With that said, you have generations of maleless women.
Right.
And so now you're saying man up. Now, we have these women who raise males.
Yes.
To be maleless.
Yes. And so how does one fix that?
That's the question.
I don't know. It sounds to me like a core issue that's going to take as many generations as it took to get here to fix it.
That could be a problem because we don't have that kind of time.
Yeah,
like prisons. You know, prisons are built out in the suburbs. They're not built in the inner city where they need the jobs. And prisons are built by private concerns who lease them out to the states under the contract that you have to keep them 95% full. And we would put this prison in this now economically depressed rural area where you have lost industry to other countries or whatever. Now, another point. A lot of police force that's in your cities actually white policemen come from the surrounding areas. If they come from these areas, they're going to work very hard to make sure that you have a constant supply of prisoners in order to man those prisons so the people in that area will have work constantly. It's kind of like when immigrants come to America and they make money and they send the extra money back home in order to support home and make it possible for home to strive and benefit. It's the same scenario.
I guess the point I'm trying to make, I don't know how this can be fixed unless at some point in time, and I think this was what Bill O'Reilly was trying to say in a very awkward way this past week on his television show, is that the males are going to have to, as Tracy said, man up in order to make it better. How do you get them to man up? And, you know, and I think the interesting thing is that we are looking at the, and I'm, you know, obviously not an African-American, and I'm not sure, I have no experience in that particular society, but it appears to me that, generally speaking, that there today is a larger middle-class black community than there was 20 or 30 years ago, and that black community has separated themselves from the rest of the black community. Now, up here in Youngstown, I'm not sure that's the case. I know down south it probably is. There's solid, you know, African American communities down there that are middle class communities. Some of them are segregated out, from what I've read. But is there any leadership coming from those folks coming in to take a look at the gangsta people that are causing the problems?
Well, the problems are coming because of the lack of economy. And if blacks continue to think that whites is going to solve their unemployment problem, if whites was to move into the inner, if a white company was to move into the inner city and they needed 50 employees, they're not going to hire 50 employees from that area. They're going to hire maybe 5-10%.
They don't even hire that.
And you have federal laws. You have federal laws that says that guidelines that say, well, 10% for this county, 30% for that county and so on. And so and here in St. Louis, like on that bridge I was talking about, where it's being built in an area of St. Louis, it's 60 or 70% black. And on the other side where the bridge is going to land in Illinois, it's like 90-some-odd percent black. Well, the federal government say, well, you only have to comply to 14.7%. So if blacks is going to do away with this unemployment problem that they have, they're going to have to hire their own people. That's the only solution that I see. If not,
and we don't
have to
build
your own economic institution.
Hold on. But this is the problem that happens. We don't get contracts. See, what happens is we get jobs, and jobs don't hire people. And so when we go to bid on something, they actually the way things run, you don't get the contracts so that you can actually make it happen.
Right.
What state do you live in? Every state
in Ohio.
Set aside by law. I know
we have,
that was a rhetorical question.
But
every
we have
state I've ever worked in has always had set-aside programs so that minority businesses got their fair, you know, quote-unquote, their fair share of contracts, and they were awarded sums of money great enough to pay prevailing union wages from the other companies to their people.
But what
happens is that the workers are white.
No, but even if you get in the state of Ohio, even if you get in, they don't give you enough to leverage. Now they did it one time, and they put they shadowed people, which means they were just check signers.
Yeah.
So you had minority businesses that were supposed to be minority businesses, but all they had was a shadow company.
Sure.
Right.
And they destroyed it. But what happens is they have not given credible companies that will do what is necessary for the hiring of minorities. They have not given them that, and this goes under all administration.
Well, they do hire minorities. They hire white women.
Who's the they?
The they is the people that are put in place by politicians. You have, you know, when you if you look at Ken Blackwell, his office did, I believe, and if Larry's out there, he may have to call in with that number, but he did something like 30% minority contracts, when he was actually inside of state office holders, which was helping. But then when he got out of office, it dropped back down to like less than 2%.
Yeah.
Because we're not a part of the infrastructure of the network that gets contracts.
I want to tell you what somebody told me at breakfast this morning. It was kind of on this point. We were sitting talking at breakfast this morning, and one of the other lawyers sitting across from me said, my clients love this economy. And I said, why do they like the economy? He says, because they can put an ad in the paper for the most menial kind of job, cost them $2 to put it on Craigslist. They'll get 650 applicants, 60% of which have college degrees, and will go work for minimum wage. How do you do that? How does anybody compete in that kind of environment for anything?
You don't.
Well, what makes that statistic even more impressive against your argument, Mark, is the fact that only 4% of the unemployed in the United States, not 4% of the population, 4% of the total unemployed are college graduates. So if that many college graduates are applying, why aren't all the other people applying in the same ratio? Why do you get 60% college graduates applying for a minimum wage job? They should be the 4% applying. Because they're only 4%
sure
of the unemployed.
Because the other people have dropped out of the workforce.
Yeah, I'm not sure how college graduates are counted into the workforce in these statistics.
Yeah.
They graduate from college. How are they considered unemployed, but they never had a job? When do they become part of?
I don't think they're included.
I don't think they're included.
You have to understand the numbers are really messed
they're
up.
They're huge.
Correct. So the number that you see, and that doesn't count the people that have never been on the system.
Yeah.
They say the people who stop looking, which is a vast number greater than the current registered.
That number is never shown.
Identified unemployed. Yeah. And it's like if you're not working, what are you doing with your time? See, you can't tell me you're tied up 40 hours a week doing something else, and you should still be out there looking at least 5 hours a week.
They're living at home with mom and dad.
No, they're really not. They're living off the grid. They're not living at home with mom and dad.
A lot of them are.
A lot of them aren't. A lot of them are not living in the basement anymore. They move.
We have a lot of people that are in the underground.
They're moving their girlfriend and boyfriend. They're under, right.
You have a lot of people in the underground economy who are working. But whoever they're working for, that person's not paying taxes on them.
There's
so they're working under the table.
System. Absolutely.
Yeah. And but that, you know, that worker, too, because that worker isn't paying tax out of the money he gets, even if it's smaller, because the people that work usually find out, and that's what's wrong with the welfare system. You work a little bit, and they take more than that away from you, you know? There's no way to wean people away from assistance.
Even with unemployment, they don't pay you enough to take care of your business. But if you go get something to try to take care of your business, they take that from you. So
yeah,
they don't give you enough to live, to survive. And the system itself works against the people that it's supposed to be working for, and they keep on stacking on the benefits.
Yeah.
Which brings you back to the conclusion that the starting point, the number one foundation to help to start fix things is a vibrant economy.
They don't want a vibrant economy.
Who's they?
They is the system in which it has been constructed, because if they did, they would change the laws. They would change the accountability of whether it be welfare or whether it be health care, whether it be the set-aside program. The accountability of America with the systems that we have in place are not there.
Let me make a comment on that, because I'm very serious when I say this. You know what the single biggest thing they could do to help business in this country? The single biggest thing they could do, leave the tax code alone. I don't care what the taxes are or how it's set up, but these things change from year to year, and no businessman can make any long-term plans based on it. And I know that, Tracy. They've been doing that since I've been 30 years old.
But they change it. I think that goes into what Philadelphia and Alex and probably I think Pianchi was on the same bandwagon. That goes to the moving bar. Black people think it's all because of them, but in actuality, it's all because they never want the playing field to be level. And if you look at when you talk about lobbyists, you're watching the big boxes and the major corporations squeeze every small business that they possibly can out of business. And when they do that, they're going to create a monopoly that we're not going to be able to control that beast.
I'm going to agree. I'm going to give you an example. I do real estate. Okay, I've done real estate. My family's done real estate for years and years and years. They change the depreciation schedules. They change when you can do it, how you can do it. You can't make any reliable, you know, financial plan based on anything that's existing right now, because next year they're going to change it on how you depreciate the real estate, what the recapture is when you go to sell it. The latest thing they've done is with Obamacare, they put a 3.5% tax on rental income. Now, that goes, if your gross, as I understand how it's supposed to work, your gross proceeds from rent have got to exceed $250,000 a year, which leaves people like me out. But it also brings a lot of people in, because $250,000 or $350,000 a year is not a whole lot of money when you own a 30-unit apartment complex. Now, how does the owner, people who invest in real estate, which takes a lot of construction, makes a lot of construction jobs, how do they deal with that? And more important than that is, how do the people who that 3.5% is going to get passed on to going to deal with it? And, you know, this is one of the little surprises in Obamacare. What does a 3.5% tax on real estate have to do with health care?
You got to pay for it.
Yeah, I know that.
That's the problem.
So you want to know what's wrong with business? Who's going to open up a business when you're looking at stuff like that?
I got to take a break in just a second, but I got to throw this in here. I had a conversation a little bit earlier with a young man, and I was telling him it takes something like 252 days, 230 some days in taxes and regulations before you start making a dollar for most American workers. That number is just ludicrous. It should not take you 7 months to gain a profit on the work that you do, just based on taxes and fees.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand how, within the African-American community generally, courses aren't offered to folks. And I would love to get those into the white community, showing how this stuff works and what we're dealing
with.
They don't want you to know. You need to know.
They don't want you to know. They don't want
the majority
you to understand
of African-Americans are involved in the public school system, and the public school systems around the country are starting to fall apart. They
don't
want
closing,
you to know.
Public schools.
They don't want you to know government process. They don't want you to know economics, and they don't want you to know commerce.
That's right. Knowledge is power, and that's the bottom line. The more you know, the more power you've got.
They don't want you to know that. And as long as you don't know, then they can hoodwink you and you win.
Yeah.
Or they win.
Orwell wrote that in 1946 in his book 1984. He talked about newspeak, where they begin to limit the language so that Bianchi and I couldn't communicate because we had a smaller vocabulary, and they've proven that out. Back in 1968, the average high school graduate graduated with a 24,000-word vocabulary. Today, the average the average high school graduate today, if they graduate high school at all, only has an 8,600-word vocabulary. How the heck
wow.
do you express yourself?
Wow, I haven't heard,
you
I
don't
know
have,
that.
And you remember, Mark, did you read Orwell's 84, 1984? Did you talk
about yes.
how they purged the language and they contracted
yeah.
words like we're doing with texting and everything so that
yeah.
they lose the meaning, so that you're not
yes.
asking what do these three words mean? It's only this one word mashed. It means one single concept, and you can't debate it because you can't decide.
Yeah, I give you an example of that, the word racism.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
The word gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have changed what word what the definition of a word means so that no one knows what a word means.
Yeah.
And people
are
afraid
to laugh at a Christmas
carol.
Also,
people don't read as much as they did in the past because of technology. And and that's something that society is also trying to do. They're trying to eliminate access to books. And, that's the reason why you're seeing most of the large bookstore chains close now. They're putting everything on the internet so that the government is able to control content of knowledge.
You can still go to your library and get a book.
You can go, I mean, you can get books, but you can get, I mean, you have to understand, if you can get movies and you can get DVDs and you can get CDs, if you can get information and you can get magazines and you can get
right.
books. Our problem is we have misaligned our priorities.
Yeah. Right, but people will not make the effort to go to the free library and get books.
No,
if
sweetie.
They have access
listen.
To the internet.
Listen,
and they put books on the internet.
Kindle.
You know how foolish that sounds?
And the Kindle and so forth.
If I can get a book on a Kindle, then I can get a book in the bookstore.
Right.
But what I'm saying is
that the bookstores are closing, and the only place you can get the actual physical book
right.
is in the free library. But people are choosing not to do that because it's easier for them to look on the internet. But if they go on the internet, like a central government will be able to control the content of knowledge. And
they can change the meaning of words.
If it's
have
on
you heard
the
of the Library of Congress? I mean, you have you.
But people are not
going
to make that type of effort to go to the Library of
Congress. You don't have listen. The problem is we are playing games instead of reading on those Kindles. The problem is not the words and the books are not there. The problem
right.
is the priority of me reading the books on it are not there, because what I'm doing is instead of me reading a book on my Kindle and reading a book on my tablet and reading a book on my phone, what I'm doing is I'm playing Bubbles and Words with Friends.
Right. Well,
that's
also
the
happening. The texting and so forth and the chatting on the internet.
That's the problem. Our priorities have been misaligned by entertainment and not aligned by information. We'll be right back.
This is the only radio show I've ever been on where I take notes all during the call based upon what you people are saying, going, oh, that sounds like a good book. I got to read that. Oh, that's a good point.
You know what, Mike? I do the same thing.
Do you?
I do exactly the same thing, and I ran into Tracy's show by accident, actually,
mm-hmm.
sitting in a parking lot when I'll never forget about it, but there was the Republican primaries when
mm-hmm.
Michelle – Was her name Michelle Bachmann?
Yeah.
Okay, she showed up on one of the cover magazines, and I can't tell you the name of the cover, but whoever's listening, because, you know, Philadelphia and some of the ones that are on here might remember the show. And I actually, Tracy was making a call of how they made her look so psychotic, you know,
mm-hmm.
on this photo shoot to
mm-hmm.
discredit her.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, you know what? That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
You know, when I seen the cover,
Yeah.
And I started listening, and I've been hooked. And I take notes, and I know, you know, from listening to people, I've only met Tracy. Now I have met Styx, you know, because I've been at the studio. But, you know, South Carolina, I've never met him, Alabama, Yankee, he's on there. I love to hear his conversations. And of course, Alex, you know, I know he's from Florida. And I mean, just so many. And I remember a heated conversation when I think it was Katrina. No, it was the storm that went through New York. Bianchi, are you there? Are you still listening? Do you remember that conversation that came up when that storm hit New York? Do you remember that show? You were on that day. Do you remember that?
I don't know.
That?
What were we talking about?
About Sandy? Well, Hurricane Sandy?
That's it. And there was a caller who we loved listening to. He had an African name. Now, I don't hear him on the show anymore.
Uh-oh.
Do you remember him? He called in during that time.
I don't remember.
You don't remember? Very deep. I wish I could think of his name. But I do. I take notes because I just love Tracy's show. And you know, I wish we could have this big reunion so we could get to meet everybody. You know, have a spot, and then we could just all go and say hello in person, you know?
I get that.
Well, all you got to do is have food. I come.
Well, how are you going to get here? You'd have to get a plane ticket, right?
Minnesota? I'm in Missouri.
Missouri. Okay.
I've been to Ohio one time in my life.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it a good experience?
Yeah, it was. I came there for a conference. On economics, by the way.
Yeah.
It was kind of cold, though.
In what city?
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, yeah.
Okay, well, very far from where I am. I'm in Ohio, but I'm near the river.
Yeah.
Up toward, well, Tracy's actually more north of where I live.
Yeah.
But it's more like in the, Steubenville made their, you know, they were in the news quite a bit there lately, and I'm not too far from, I am actually too far from Cleveland, thank goodness, but I'm in the country, so
yeah.
I've always lived in the country, and I don't think I want to change. I like it here.
I live both, and I'm 6 miles out of the center of town, and I am in a rural farming community, and
yeah.
I've got some acreage here. And I'm stuck between some bigger pieces of land. I've only got 10 acres out here.
Well, are you in Ohio, Mike?
No, I'm in South Carolina.
South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina and I know each other.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard him on the show lately.
He's working on a family business thing, and he's off on the road a little bit right now. He called me yesterday or Sunday it was or whatever to talk to me, or the day before yesterday, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
To get my opinion on something, because he knows I've done some of the kind of work they're looking at. So we had a good conversation, and he's got his act together. He's a brilliant young man, and he's going places.
Well, I have a question. With what we hear, you know, when the comment was made that people are working for cash in like an underworld type thing, don't you think that's a real step to socialism? Because I think, If I'm correct, and you guys will probably know, the Philippines is a communist country, isn't it?
No, they have a democratic government.
They have a democratic government there.
Mm. I have friends who've moved there and love it there because they're saying it's the way the United States used to be.
Right. But aren't there still some parts of that country that really don't really have a whole lot of social structure? I mean, isn't it? It was a communist country at one time, right?
Well, Hong Kong and Taiwan and all that. Now, because of the fact that we gave Hong Kong to the Chinese, and after all that, you know, now that is technically communist. But the communists leave their hands off. I know some people who run the banking system over there and run the, what do you call it, the educational system. I've met them here in the United States at conferences, and they're saying the communists kind of let you know they're in charge, but they pretty much leave it alone because it's their cash cow. It's where all the money comes from, supporting all the failed ideas, so they pretty much leave their hands off of Hong Kong and let them do whatever they want. But,
so people live, like, you know, they sell things on the streets for cash, the poor. I'm talking about the poor. Okay?
But a cash economy in this country, to me, is a more libertarian. It's the, you know, it's a place where it's government, get out of my life totally. I want nothing from you, and I take nothing from you, and I give you nothing.
Right.
It's more
that's
libertarian
how I feel, too.
Than it is communist. Yeah.
Yes, socialist. That's how I feel. And that's how I was raised.
Yeah.
You know, some of the people, you know, and it, that, you know, my great grandfather would have came to this country in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually smuggled over by who became my grandmother and another boy and girl who were sent from Germany by their families over here.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had a little tipping of knowing, you know, what was headed with the Nazis and what was coming down the pike. And they sent their four young people, two boys, two girls, all four different family, you know, from different families.
Yeah.
My grandmother would have been about 16 when she smuggled who became my grandfather, great-grandfather.
Yeah.
So a lot of the people who are calling about their ancestry, you know, and saying how long they've been in the country and they've been brought here, you know, at 16 being sent here, they ended up having 17 children, and, you know, we really haven't, our families haven't been here that long. I mean, as I, you know, as I'm talking about, you know, my father's family, you know, as I am, and we
and
haven't really been
always,
here that
And
long.
That's what's always caused me a lot of pain about the black experience. They can't go back and trace because there are no records in slavery for very few. And it's just, that would kill me not to be able. Now, did I go back and research all my family 300 years? No, but I have little bits and pieces that were passed down by great-grandparents and stuff. I at least have the comfort of going to bed at night knowing if I ever got off my lazy butt and researched it, I'd find it out. It's got to be killing for a black person to know that it wouldn't matter what you went to do. It just doesn't exist. It's gone.
Right.
That history. And it's got to, especially the way families were just so willfully broken up and stuff. So, you know, there are some pains there that you and I, and Tracy rightfully and some other people said, we will never fully understand. But
absolutely.
I figure my job is to at least walk the distance between the extreme white supremacists and the average black person, at least try to walk the distance and get as far across that valley as I can get and meet them on some common level so that they do understand. And that is my job. You know, that's, you got to do that. If you have a heart, you got to do that to help people.
Right.
But I just, I feel badly for some of the people that call in because I don't know where I would be if I was knocked down every time.
There you go.
Do you still get up? You know? I don't know where I would be on that, you know. Now, I don't know how many times I've been knocked down and had to get up compared to the average white person. I imagine it's a few more times than the average white person. I don't know if it approximates the number of the more blessed black person. I don't know.
You know, let me ask this really quick.
Oh, Tracy, you're back.
I'm back. You know, I have to go pay some bills. Thank you. What happens is, and this is something that we need to really be cognizant of, it's not about the color of your skin. It's about the color of the green. And if I'm wrong, I want you guys, Mark, I know that you know this, I want you guys to jump in and tell me, Tracy, you're crazy. We tend to think that they don't want you in the room, in the process, because they don't want you in there because you're black. I am coming to the resolve, they don't want you in there because they don't want their brother in the room. They don't want their grandmother in the room because of greed. It's all about greed, and they do not want to share the market share with anyone, no matter what color you are. So if you don't go in and take what you think is yours and work at it, they will never give you anything.
Absolutely.
Well, that's definitely true. But there's also an aspect to that. And I'm giving the example of when Bill Cosby, when he attempted to buy the NBC network, he definitely had the money. to buy the network, but it was the fact that he was black and they were looking at his background. They did not try to allow him to bid on that network.
Because
of his race and his background.
Philadelphia. He had blacks who didn't want him to buy that network. I heard that story. I remember that.
Glenn Beck wants
to buy that other network, and they wouldn't sell him, and that was white folks.
Yes.
It's
the truth. Al Gore didn't want Glenn Beck to buy it because of
exactly.
what he was going to
right.
So
that's
we,
right.
again, I we've got to really understand that some of this may be about race, but some of this is really about, a lot of this, the majority of this is all about green and market share and lack of control. And see, it may not have been, it may not have been because of the color of his skin, but the lack of control that they would have over him with him there.
Well, the color of skin do play a major part in decisions, Tracy. So don't say that.
I really want
to get into examples.
But Pianki, we understand that black is still black. And I'm not saying because you're black, you get a pass. But what I'm saying is they let certain blacks get certain places if they still have influence and control over them. But if they cannot control you when you get to where you're going, and they cannot make you, and they cannot influence you, they will box you out.
Well, you know, we had the St. Louis Rams. No, it was the St. Louis Cardinals. And Walter Payton, and I can't think of who the other players tried to buy it. But they couldn't buy it, even though they had the money. And it don't necessarily mean green, because when you go into other countries, their currency is not green.
Oh, yes, it is. It translates into dollars. No, I'm serious. It translates into dollars and or oil. Or it might be green oil. It might be green. It transfers into commerce.
Well, I would definitely think a person like Magic Johnson would have the money to buy a franchise like the L.A. Lakers, but he's not in the right power structure to do so. So therefore, he's not allowed to buy a franchise.
Oh no! You got some of that wrong, because you know he is a part owner in the Lakers.
No, but what I'm saying is he has enough cash behind him that
he probably
could be the principal owner of an entire sports franchise, but they don't put him in the right circles to do
that's
so.
That's not true. Magic chose not to, and Dr. Best wasn't trying to sell it.
Someone probably came along and spoke to the owner and said, we don't want this particular person as the principal owner.
I don't think that happened in basketball. There's such a big presence of black players in basketball. I tell you something that you wouldn't believe. In baseball itself, we had these tournaments here where we had these two teams come out of Chicago that represent the Chicago Cubs and the White Sox, and they were all black players, and their budget is over $500,000 a year for these 14-year-old baseball players.
Cincinnati Reds, because of the politics of the players
on the teams. So blacks have, their presence have made things a lot easier to come by than what it was, say, 50 years ago.
The Cincinnati Red has a black contingency of owners.
What did they do with Barnes Scott?
They don't. I don't know what they did with her, but all I know is that they got a nice little chunk of change down there in Cincinnati, owned by a whole bunch of black folks.
So you're starting to see blacks moving to areas that that they weren't before, and that's good.
They may not be advertised, and maybe they should, and maybe there's rationale of why they don't, and I can understand that. But you and one of the guys, he actually lives here who has ownership in the Cincinnati Reds. He lives here in Youngstown, who's an African American.
And that's what's needed. When you start seeing more of that, when blacks actually began to control or more economic power in the United States in areas that's, what I call out of the box, then a lot of these social problems that we see going on in the poor areas will, sort of start diminishing a little bit.
I don't know about
because
that,
they would
Bianchi,
take more.
Right.
They would take more interest in these areas.
But
I don't
also,
know,
you have to realize that the government makes money off of these prisons. They need to populate these jails.
But again,
they're going to prey on the poor to put them in jail so they can put industry in the jail and make money off of
the poor. Come out of the negative. The only reason why that is because we don't take ownership and go back in and pull them out at a young age.
Yeah,
we are
going
to
provide something for them to
do. You don't have the structure within your community to pull them out.
You don't have to have a structure. All you got to have is the want to. You just have to have a desire.
One person with a willing heart.
You got to have
a
desire to go ahead and hit your head up against the wall and start pulling people out and helping people up. And getting over their flaws and giving them second chances and not exploiting them when you see their weaknesses, but start covering them and encouraging them to do better. We always want to look at the negative aspect of this, but we can make a better community if we choose to. The question is, do you want to?
That was well said, Tracy. Thank you. That's how I feel with the challenges of, you know my personal story of the mentally ill. You know, we come across similar things like that. And the unfairness and the discrimination. And it still is there with blacks, you know, and everyone that calls, you know, and it's true. And
we need to
change it. Because if we feel as though we're up against a wall, and I have many times in my life, I'm sure many of us who are listening, you know, on the call, and you, Tracy, have been up against it too. You just have to have the will. And it has nothing to do. It has everything to do with the color of our blood.
Actually, it really does.
You have to have a heart. You have to have a heart.
But you gotta have people that support you so that when you are down. And let me say, and I might as well blow smoke and do Mark Manji like he does me. Yeah, because he needs this. There are people that come into your life not based upon the color of their skin, but just who they are. They come in to encourage you and to push you and to motivate you as you go through the process because they understand it. And they tell you when you're wrong. Mark Monroe, I got to give him credit for doing this with me. They cover you when you're wrong. They lift you when you are down, and they motivate you when you want to quit. And they make you mad by telling you the truth about yourself, whether you like it or not. That's the only way that you're going to win. Pardon me?
It's called love. It's when people love you. It's when your parents tell you you're not staying out till midnight. It's a little thing like that, or you know what, you're going to hurt yourself.
Absolutely.
It's called
and Mark
love.
Mark has been a supporter of mine since I met his son. And when he found out what I was doing, we've known each other for a while, but he and his family have just become what I call a friend. And I don't use that one lightly. And he's just been there. And when I do something wrong, he's tried to come and help me work my way out. And that's a friend. That's someone who actually cares and wants to see you thrive and who is concerned. Everybody's not your friend. And you're going to make some people into a friend. You're going to find out that they're not your friend, and they're going to knock your head upside the wall and take you for a ride and a loop. But that's just a lesson learned.
Well, that works in other ways, too. You know, like me, for instance, I don't go to nightclubs. I don't go to Terrapins. I don't hang out in the street because I don't live just for myself. I have people that depend on me. I have a grandson. I have young ball players that depend on me to help them to develop their skills. So I have to take care of myself so they can get the best and most that they possibly can out of me.
But you got a mindset to care about your grandchildren. See, we got problems. I got kids, and I won't take care of them. I take care of my dog better than some people take care of their kids. That's a problem.
You know they got
no
pet
one
food stamps
take care
now.
Of their don't start. 440, your mic is on. Bianchi, call in money with the pet food stamps.
I think a lot of it sometimes, too, is recognizing opportunity. I met, must have been a good month and a half ago, an older black gentleman from Youngstown, and it was at the lake, and he had a boat, and I had a boat, and I'm putting the boat in there, and he's talking to me, and I'm talking to him, and he's saying, I says, I don't know. I says, how good my motor is. I says, I'm going to probably get trapped out there. He says, I'll give you my phone number. He says, and I'll come out and get you. And I says, you come out and get me. I says, I'll pay you. And then he says, if I do enough of that, he says, I could pay the boat off. And I'm looking at him, and I know he's retired. And we're both looking at each other, and I says, you know what you're saying. And I says, I'd make up a bunch of doggone business cards. So every time I've seen him since, he's been around boat landings. I can't even talk to him because he's talking to other people. But we both smile at each other.
He got him a fair change business.
Fair change? He's doing more at spare change. There's people out there out in the middle of that lake. I'm telling you straight. When you're out in the middle of that lake and you ain't got a way off, you don't care what they look like.
Yeah, them lakes are deep, too.
He got a spare change, and that's what I'm talking about. We haven't learned how to become innovative for a need and saying, okay, let's do this. Okay, that works. I just gave gave Mark.
That sometimes the opportunities are there, and it's not just the white or black thing. It's sometimes they go right by us and we don't even recognize it.
I just gave Mark one of my new salesman job, my new salesman kits. That do pretty good, Mark.
This thing is terrific.
Isn't this awesome?
This is great.
Absolutely. I'm going to make it on vacation.
That's what I'm going to use. I got all my tunes here on my little phone. And I can
you guys have a nice weekend.
Hey, thank you. What'd you say, Mark?
I got my tunes on my phone, and I can stick it in here, and I can play my tunes.
That's right. And you can let everybody else listen to your tunes while you're listening.
This
isn't that awesome?
This is great.
What, the little square cube thing? A speaker?
No, this is not there's this little speaker that turns anything into a speaker.
Yeah, it's round. It's a circle like a drum.
Yeah, it turns anything that you put into a speaker based on vibration.
Yeah.
It works. I saw it
on Shark Tank.
Shark Tank. I saw it on Shark Tank. I found it.
I saw that on Shark Tank. And you know where else that was? I was
where?
At the Curiosity Shop. Do they still sponsor your show?
I have not been back there for a while, but I need to go back and see them.
Well, I'm there on a regular basis. How about I ask for you?
Yes, please do.
Okay.
And they'll tell you I'm a flake. I just need to come in. I got to find anybody looking for a sales job, call me.
Well, you know, I'm going on vacation too, I think, maybe another week. Maybe another week. I don't know.
I'm trying to
you
pay
know?
For vacation. I got to go see a friend, and I'm trying to pay for it, and so I'm doing whatever I can to hustle my dollars up so I don't have to go out there like a pauper. Hey, it's been great, guys. I love you all. We'll be back on Monday. I've enjoyed the conversation this week. You guys have really made it and very, very impactful and very, very insightful. And because of you, we get to do what we do, and I appreciate it. I fuss at you in Philadelphia. I yell at you. Pianki, I scream your name. Those of you who are there, but I want you to know how much I really, really, really appreciate you. I don't think you understand that. You could walk in the studio and I wouldn't know who you are, but I don't know how much you guys know, how much you guys are dear to my heart.
Now you know who I am. I'm handsome.
You know who I am. I'd be the guy bumping into everything.
You guys have issues. So listen, I'm gone. I got to play a couple spots before I go for the weekend. God bless you, and I'll see you on Monday, same bat time, same bat channel on WSOM AM 600, iHeartRadio, and TracyandFriends.com. We'll be back on Monday.
Well, have a nice weekend.
You can make it if you try.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com. I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment.